Hi, and welcome to episode 89 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, the creator of The Red Mouse from Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me this week are the man who's wanted more than Dr. Richard Kimball, is Mr. Tony Esmond.
You right?
Are you in the toilet again, Tony?
Yeah. This bloke's in here with me. Get out!
Well, it won't be Dan Butcher this week, because unfortunately, Dan Butcher could not make it. He's rather unwell, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Yes. Someone's
I can't
shot
say
him.
What his last message to us was, but yeah, it does sound like he's not very well.
Yeah. He was shot with a kryptonite bullet, and unfortunately, he can't be here.
In the bum.
Yes. That'll get you. That'll properly get you.
Yeah.
And as it's convention time again, we've got another guest, and this week we're joined by the gentleman behind the upcoming Leamington Comic Con, one we've mentioned a few times, taking place on the 25th of March. It's Dan Mallier. Yeah.
Hi, guys.
Hey, all right,
how's
Dan.
You okay?
Good.
We are very well, although I sounded like I wasn't completely confident about the date it was happening as I read it.
Yeah, somebody's put a question mark. It's like Anchorman, isn't it? They just put a question mark in your script.
That obviously means that I'm not doing enough promotion on social media, then, if you don't know the bloody date.
You're on social media, then.
Yes, we've been talking about Leamington quite a few times because
yes,
it's
very
one
much
of the
looking
shows
forward
that,
to it
that we're actually going to. So
yeah,
and
we're doing a panel.
Yeah, and we've been chums with Dan for quite some time.
Yep.
So and he listens to us, and basically we're whores for any kind of public attention.
Any kind of attention.
Any kind of attention, and you know, we'll be your best friend. That's essentially that's what we tell everyone, isn't it, Tony?
Yeah, we're lying to them.
Yeah.
I'm just a bit disappointed that it took 89 episodes before you got me on, but I won't mention that again.
Here we go.
You're running out of people now.
Look, calm down, Whitney. All right, you're on now. it's been a funny comics week, hasn't it? Really, this week.
Been a weird one, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been a weird one. We're going to talk.
I've read a lot of good comics this week. You know, it cheered me up.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Kept you off the streets, didn't it, Tony?
It did, yeah.
Yeah. Now, we'll get into the con in a bit, but I actually saw Logan this weekend.
Oh, you finally saw it, didn't you? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well done. Well done, you.
Thanks. can I have a Smartie?
Yep.
Wonderful.
Is that something?
Right. And Logan was a strange one, because it was one of those films that I knew it was going to be good, but it wasn't like I was desperate to see it in the cinema.
Yeah.
But having seen it, it was probably the biggest surprise in the cinema I've had in quite some time.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I knew it was going to be good in a weird way.
Yeah, because I was worried we built it up. That's why when you said to me, what was it like? Because you messaged me, didn't you, after I'd come out. And you said, what was it like? And I said, well, I'm going to let you make your mind up. Because I don't like it when people go, oh, it's fucking amazing. And you go in expecting like it to be amazing. And sometimes people don't get that, do they? Do you know what I mean? So I thought, I'll just say, and you said just one thing, good or bad, I went good. And then you were sort of happy. But
yeah,
firstly, I don't trust, we'll get onto this in a minute, I don't trust film and TV reviewers, firstly.
Yeah.
So I generally make my own mind up about something, you know. Well, I'm glad you liked it, mate. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it was a real, real big surprise. It's certainly, I would say probably one of the best X-Universe films. I don't consider it to be an X-Men film. I would say it's more of an X-Universe, isn't it, really?
Well, that's cool, you know. I kind of like that.
And it's I would honestly say it's by far the best film out of all of them. Just beginning, middle, and end, it was just top-notch. I walked out of there with a big smile on my face. And Dan Butcher was right. There is a bit of violence in it.
It's pretty lively, isn't it?
It's a bit lively. But, you know, Dan seemed quite shocked about it. Grow up, Dan. You're a man. No, but there was plenty of scenes where I was like, ooh. Do you know what I mean? Did you have that?
And that bloke who sounds a bit like you's in it, isn't he?
Which one?
Bloke from The Office. Not The Office. His writing mate from
what
The Office.
What do you mean he sounds like me? What, Stephen Merchant sounds like me?
Yeah.
Hello, ladies. Hello, ladies.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly like you. he's quite good, isn't he? It took me about like 10 seconds to go, who the fuck is that? And then, oh, it's him. Yeah. He was good, though. I liked him in it.
Yeah, it was top notch from top to bottom.
Patrick Stewart was brilliant in it.
Yes.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. He's I would say he's the funniest part of it, which is really weird when you can sort of say...
Bits of it are just like weird, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When Professor X actually works as a comedy sort of character, you know you're in for a different sort of...
It's very layered, though, isn't it? I mean, we won't ruin it for anyone, but it's certainly got some huge layers going on in it. And little mysteries pop up as well. You think, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, about things that have happened in the past.
But it's a nice sort of standalone story, though, isn't it? It's like a wonderful one-shot comic, which I kind of thought the Old Man Logan story, that brilliant one by Mark Miller and Steve McNiven that kicked it all off back in the day. You know, even though I will... It's a bit hypocritical. I haven't read any of the new stuff, and I know it's quite good, isn't it, Tony, from what I've heard? But
I like some of it, yeah. And I think having this sort of grumpy older character in it, it's okay. I would rather have Wolverine back. I think everyone probably agrees.
I like the idea of the Old Man Logan story being that almost an Elseworlds tale that you can enjoy rather than bringing him into the 616. But that's just me. But the film's highly recommended.
Who's in it, Dan?
I haven't, no.
We haven't spoiled anything, have we?
No, that's right. No, it is something me and Lisa, our partner, are desperate to go and see it. But with organising a con and having a young son, we get to go out about as frequently as Hail Bop coming round. So it's...
yeah. Which brings us nicely onto Leamington Comic Con. Like you say, you've been organising it for quite some time. You took a year off last year, didn't you?
Normally our kind of we had an October slot for the previous two cons, but then we'd kind of just life events getting in the way, so like buying a house and other bits and pieces. Then we rather foolishly went off and tried to set up a comic shop as well. So we then pushed back.
We'll be talking about that.
so absolutely. So we ended up pushing it back just because it was just too much to fit in with children, business, moving house, other bits and pieces. So yeah, so we've kind of basically 18 months it's been since the 2015 event, so we're ready to go again.
Good.
Yes, and we're thoroughly looking forward to it, but let's start at the beginning. I sound like a psychotherapist, don't I? So how what gave you the crazy idea? Yeah, that'd be a scary thought, wouldn't it, me as a psychotherapist? What gave you the crazy idea to actually start a Comic-Con, and what was that journey like for the first one?
I think it was just having a narcissistic personality. I think that's what it was about.
Is that the same as self-harming?
Yeah,
it sounds a little bit like that. Yeah,
something like that. Yeah, if you run one, give it a go, see what you think. If I'd have known this, I wouldn't have bothered. No, basically, it actually came about. I went to Kev Brett's Nerdfest in Nottingham.
I went to that. That was good.
That would have been back end of 2013, I think.
Okay.
I think it was. And I was just basically, because of what I do as job, I drive up and down motorways quite a bit, so I kind of tend to think about a lot of things, none of it work related, just other stuff. And I thought about Nerdfest, and I just thought, actually, why don't I have a go at setting up a comic con in Leamington? So basically I came home after a day at work and spoke to Lisa, bearing in mind Josh, our son, was only about 4 months old at the time, and said, oh, I'm going to put on a comic con. And Lisa basically putted and rolled her eyes at me. And then about 30 seconds later, she looked at me and went, you're serious about this, aren't you? And I said, yeah. And then it kind of just went from there, really. So what I ended up doing was just setting up the social, set up the social media while I should have been working. And it kind of really snowballed. A lot of people just went for it. There was a lot of interaction on the Facebook page and the Twitter, and it kind of then, I guess, it validated that it was something worth doing, and that's kind of how it started.
So did you put like a who'd be interested in type thing out first, or did you just like go for it? Yeah. Right, okay.
I set it up. So I set up the Lem Comic Con pages, didn't have any logos or anything. It was just literally, and then threw it out there and said, would anyone be up for this? And Yeah, was a had so much feedback and interaction of people thought it would be a good idea, something great for the town, and that's kind of where it started.
Okay, so, okay, cool.
Yeah. So I ended up crowdfunding the first one. So I'd seen that a couple of other shows had done it, because I'd backed True Believers on Kickstarter, and so I thought, actually, yeah, we'll try and crowdfund it, because it's a good way to get publicity and have good content to out in the press stuff to kind of spread the word, and that's kind of what we did. So we ended up smashing the target. We didn't set a silly figure. I mean, I thought I could probably do the first con for about £1,000, and I ended up raising 1,600. So it was, I was very conservative in terms of what I needed.
You kept it quite small, though, didn't you? You're like, with the first ever con, you didn't overthink, you didn't sort of like stretch it too much. You wanted to make it manageable, if I remember correctly. You didn't have you didn't decide, here's 50 tables, we're going to have this, that, and the other. You were sensible, weren't you?
Definitely. Because I mean, to be fair, I mean, it was called a comic con. It was more like a kind of comic mart in a venue with 20 tables. I think there was 23 exhibitors in the first one, in the pump room. So it wasn't a complex venue. It was literally two rooms, with a perimeter of tables and people selling comics. But we ended up having just under 1,000 people turn up on the first one, which was which kind of surprised me.
That's good.
Because obviously with running a con, I don't have an army of people, so I tend to do everything from setting up tables to plugging in PA systems and everything. And I was putting tables down, and Lisa said, "Have you seen the queue outside?" And I kind of laughed and said, "There might be a queue." And then she went, "No, have you seen the queue outside?" And then I poked my head out the fire escape and saw it going about 100 yards down the road. I was like, "Oh, Jesus."
Oh, that's good.
So it's good fun, and it's kind of just grown, so we're trying to make it a little bit more complicated every time, and start off very simple, and then got a bit more complicated at the 2015 event, and then we've gone to a kind of bigger venue this year. It was just kind of take baby steps instead of just diving in with a 100 table convention and not having a background in event management would have just been an absolute nightmare.
So you started off as what you described as a bit of a comic mart in a hall sort of thing. But did you had guests at the first one, did you? Or
We had... no, we didn't. There was one. We had a kind of guest by default. Is that Al Davison, who runs Astral Gypsy. Al came along because his wife Maggie is a kind of manga... comic specialist, so she had a table at the con, and then Al, I think, was due to go up to the lakes because the con had always clashed with the lakes, and then couldn't go, and then basically turned up at Leamington on the day. So we ended up with like a kind of guest by default. But I mean, being brutally honest, back in the day, I mean, I'd hardly heard of the term small press comics and things like that, and I didn't know who Al Davison was. It's
He's great. He's a great artist, I've got to tell you. Well worth following on Instagram and stuff like that. I know Liam Moore speaks very highly of him and recommended his Patreon on the day. And hasn't he got a sort of a small comic shop type thing?
Yeah, in Fargo Village in Coventry. So he's got like an art studio with a kind of comic shop within there. So he tends to do the arty studio side, and his wife Maggie runs the comic shop.
So I think he's quite well known for sort of selling sort of how to draw type books as well. I know he normally has them on his stall, doesn't he? I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he's a great artist, incredible talent.
I think his association with Lear is that Al's friends with Alan.
Yes.
So they're good buddies. So I think that's where that connection come in.
Yeah, nice, brilliant stuff. Yeah, oh, good. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that was a bit about the first con.
Yeah,
we're going to be three in.
Right, this is the third one. Who have you gone to? So the second one, you had some good names at the second one, didn't you? You had like David Lloyd was there.
Simon Furman, Andy Wildman. I'm trying to think, we've got David Leitch to come across from Titan.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So we got. It was. to be fair, for a second con, I thought I was kind of probably punching above my weight a little bit with the guests, but it just goes to show if you don't ask, you don't get. And, you know, with particularly with David Lloyd, I mean, that took me months to get that over the line. Constant kind of every month pestering, and I think he got so pissed off with me emailing him that he just said, sod it, Dan, I'm fed up, I'll just come and do it. Because I diarized the chaser every month, and I did it literally on the dot every month until he said yes or no.
I do remember leaning over the balcony at the last one and looking down, and I could just see him pull it. He pulled a glass of red wine out from under his table, and it had one of those sort of tops like you get in a coffee cup.
Yeah, yeah.
Put the top off it, drunk a bit, put it back under, then continued sketching. And I thought, that's class, isn't it?
Yeah, he had more than class. Because one of the things that kind of got it sorted is I said, because I knew he'd, I'd met him before and spoke to him, you know, quite a few times over the last couple of years, and so I knew he'd. I'd seen him at cons, and he does like to pack it away while he's there, and it was actually I said to him, I'll get you a nice bottle of red wine, and that's what I did. So that was sat on his table, ready and waiting when he turned up with a glass as well. I even got a glass. So he
had you're a glass act, Dan. I've always said that.
Yeah, but I'd only bought in one, but we cleared out 5 empty bottles when we packed up the con.
That's you. I like the fact that's UK comics for you. I like it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So who have you got lined up for this one?
So we've got Mark Lamming, who's obviously a friend of the pod. John Paul Bove, who's come in. Montenero. Sonia Leong.
Yep.
Who's kind of, because we wanted to kind of, a lot of people ask us for more kind of, you know, like manga type, anime type art and stuff. So she was kind of first choice really too. And she's got connections with Leamington as well. So she kind of jumped at the chance to come back to her old stomping ground. And we've got Mike Garley. Mike's coming as a guest as well, and then
done all three as well, hasn't he? He's returning.
He's done. There's a couple of people that have kind of come back, like John Paul Kamath from London Horror Comic. He comes every year. He absolutely loves the show. Mike's done every year. The guys at Tea Pub have done every year. So there's a few people that do like to come back and like to try and support the show, which is good.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
And obviously we've got you guys down as guests as well.
Well, you can't have everything, can you?
That's your grave mistake there, my friend. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, we're really looking forward to it.
Shot at it. Let's just put it that way.
Before our riders are too big.
Yeah.
And then we've got the King Legacy guys as well, a guest, because they won the Small Press Factor as well. So we've got it's a small show, so we've only got 35 pages.
Yeah. You've got a few comics. There's a couple of people who are launching comics, isn't there?
Yes, there's three. There's now three. There was two yesterday, and I found out about another one today. So
Paul Rainey's releasing one, isn't he?
Thunder Brother Special is Paul Rainey's.
Yeah. Paul's great, actually. Yeah, I've been friends with Paul for many years. He's a really funny guy, because he also draws for Viz, doesn't he?
Yes, absolutely. And he's quite local as well. He's only in Milton Keynes, so he's not a million miles away from Leamington. Daryl Thorpe's launching second issue of Sub Diablo, Great Titans, and Rosie Hathaway's launching Cosmos and Other Stories. I think that's being published by Good Comics, who are also at the con.
She had a new book out.
So that's what I know about so far. I know a few people were trying to get stuff out in time, but I don't think will be ready in time.
It's the classic convention sort of dilemma, though, isn't it? You know, you want to have something new for it. Ideally, it'd be great if everyone had something new for every convention they went to, purely not for the people going there, but I think when you're selling it, you know, if you're selling the same thing over and over and over again, it can, you know, when you've got something new, it gives you an extra spark, doesn't it? An extra bit of life.
No, I think that's, you've hit on a good point there, because you do kind of find, like, you know, with the first Leamington Con, I mean, there were people coming out saying that they'd had sales comparable or better with an MCM, you know, Comic Village show.
That's good.
Whereas at the second con, not so much, but then there were some people didn't, they were still selling the same comics as the first year. So yeah. I think if you're going to come, I think certainly my advice would be, if you're going to kind of come back to a, you know, a smaller indie con, is in the first time you're there, is try and build a connection with your customer base.
Yeah.
And then get them on issue one, or, you know, the early issues, and then try and then have the next issue out. So when you're back again, there's the next part in the story, and you know you've kind of got that pretty much that guaranteed kind of sale as such. So
yeah, I've certainly experienced
with 18 months.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly experienced people who come back to your table who saw you at, like, last year, and then they come back and go, "Oh, great! I was meaning to come back to get the next issue of this." You know, it's the best feeling in the world anyway when people come back to your table for that.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the best feeling in the world, you know.
Well, you know, after talking to you.
After some of our late night conversations.
Not here, Tony. Not now.
You leave the phone on the pillow.
Yeah. you hang up. No, you hang up.
Yeah. I'll listen to fall asleep. Yeah.
Don't do your sexy voice on air.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, and what do you think with having had 18 months to get a book ready as well? Do you know what I mean? It's about time they did that. You know, if they haven't got a new one to launch, or not launch, but just show the table at Leamington. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure. I'm sure that all of the people that are returning have got new stuff out now. I certainly know, like, the likes of T-Pub and people like that have certainly got, you know, they're kind of churning out you know, comics on a fairly frequent basis, so they'll definitely have something new. But yeah, no, it's you know, yeah, like I say, I think it is good to what we've done is we've had kind of returning people. We've got a couple that are returning, but we've actually kind of refreshed pretty much the whole lineup this year. So there's about 70% of the people that are attending have never been to Leamington. So we kind of thought it was a good time to refresh the exhibitors.
So are you officially Leamington Comic Con? Because I know LS, Leamington Spa Comic Con, could cause confusions, couldn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, it's just Leamington. Yeah, just Leamington Comic Con, yeah.
Did you have any problems sort of sorting a date out, Dan? Or did you? Because I know it's a packed calendar these days, isn't it? Did you have to, like, just jump at one date and then hope it, you know, no one else jumped in at the same time?
Yeah, there was an element of that. It's... I was trying to it's a combination of different things. It was the availability, it's basically the availability of the venue and getting the price right in terms of when you can get the venue, because it's at the Spa Centre, not cheap, and you know a week swing either way can add thousands to the cost of to the venue.
So
it's kind of a combination of, you know, looking at the shows that I think could cause us an impact, you know. So are we, you know, whereas I did Leamington previously, we clashed with the Lakes, but, you know, I didn't see that really, I didn't think that was going to impact us. It's too far away. It's too much of a niche event. I didn't think that would impact us. So kind of have that. I did have, like, a kind of used the UK Comic Con's website, because Neil puts a real comprehensive show guide on there.
Yeah.
And just try and pick a date. And like I say, it's a combination then of not clashing and getting the price and the availability right with the venue, and that's kind of where it was. Even though I did have the event calendar, what I didn't bloody spot was that MCM Birmingham was a week before.
It's MCM Liverpool this week, isn't it? And, you know, there's not much of a gap between MCM events seemingly this the moment, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but again, I don't, you know, I think they're kind of very different kind of very different shows, as you know. So so it's a combination of all of those things to try and pick the best possible time. But the reason why we went March was, you know, is I didn't want to leave it. If I went for our normal October slot, then you're kind of talking 2 years since the last show and everybody's forgotten about you then. Whereas I kind of thought 18 months kind of didn't feel too bad.
Yeah, and you've kept the momentum up over that period, haven't you? Well, I was going to ask you about Small Press Factor. How did that come about?
It really came about because I got, there's a couple of things. Is one, the Leamington's always about showcasing Small Press comics, always will be. It's never going to be a TV and film show. So there was so much going on Twitter that was kind of, with people talking about comic cons, you know, these new breed of comic cons that have more TV and film, not promoting comics.
Yeah.
So I kind of got a bit fed up of seeing that. So I thought, well, I'll go and do something then as a comic con that promotes comics.
I know you and I swap messages occasionally, don't we? Giggling about the nonsense that goes on. Yeah.
Absolutely. So it was really around, you know, we're kind of with what we're doing in Leamington and with Spartown Comics, which we'll talk about in a bit, is we're trying to kind of, everything we do, we want it to be around comics first, creativity, and creating a community around all of the things that we do. So everything kind of has to tie back into those things. So having, you know, a competition where, you know, people could submit comics, they could win a free table, we'd give them promotion and other bits and pieces. Then I thought that was, you know, quite useful for Small Press creators to try and give them a platform and come along to the con. It hasn't cost them anything apart from a couple of comics that they had to send me in a post. So it's kind of, you know, like I say, it's about supporting and promoting new comic creators.
Cool. And then you had the application had to involve a video, didn't it, as well?
It did, yeah.
And you had, what, five or six good, solid applicants? Is that
five in the end. Being honest, I was really hoping for more. So I'd be lying if I said I wasn't disappointed by the turnout.
It's the first year, though, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because we had about... we had about 20 people. It was about 19 people had did the survey part. And some people even did the survey and sent comics, but then didn't do the video because they just said, I'm not going to get round to it. Just cancel the entry.
Okay.
And then there was a couple of people that were kind of questioning, well, why do the video? And there is the reason for it because, you know, I go to a lot of cons and I'd see a lot of people not engaging with potential customers. So kind of hiding behind a table, looking at phones, not talking to people. I was kind of like, well, you could have the best comic in the world, but if you can't sell it to somebody, it's pointless. And it's kind of like having the video idea was around, you know, trying to bring people out their comfort zone to real try and sell what their comic's about and to sell themselves, which you know, did put people off. But, you know, it's like I say, you know, if you can't sell a comic book on a video, what chance have you got potentially at a convention?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I don't suppose technically it had to be a video of them, did it?
I said to you know, some people, everybody did kind of do the video of them, but I said it doesn't have to be you sat in front of a webcam talking. You could basically have a video slideshow and narrate over the top of it with your inspirations, your artwork, and other bits and pieces.
A little bit of sexy jazz music.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that would have been good, yeah. It didn't have to be, like you said, them sat in front of a camera going, look at me, I'm telling a comic. It could have been done a number of different ways.
And you had some good, really good entrants, I have to say. I know we're getting... Is it next week the winners are on, Dan? Yeah. Vince, is it? Yeah.
Yes, it is indeed. We've got the... We've already said who the name of the winners were.
Yeah.
They're boys behind King's Legacy. They'll be on the show next week. That was their booby prize.
Yeah. We'll see if they show up.
Yeah.
It was around giving people, you know, promotion. You know, they had the comics reviewed, we shouted about it on social media, they're appearing on podcasts, they're getting a comic on table. I thought it was quite a good, you know,
that's a great show. Really good idea. Yeah, and are you going to continue it next year, do you think?
We're going to carry it on and then hopefully it'll just it'll gain momentum and go from there.
Yeah, no, I think it's a pretty good idea. Yeah.
So the convention's been in three different venues. This is the third venue, isn't it, you've tried out?
Yes.
How has the prep been for the, you know, because it's not like you've been in the same place for years, so you know exactly how things work. Moving to this new venue, how have you found that, the prep and getting to know it and et cetera?
One of the benefits of using the Spa Center is that they do a lot of they take away a lot of that pain for me. So,
right.
So, you know, or anything, you know, if you even go down to things like all of the kind of safety briefing and stuff, they do all of that. They, you know, they have their own, they put on staff that I can utilize on the day to do kind of different things and stuff. So there's kind of elements of it that are, you know, it's another venue that I've got to try and learn. And it's not until you're actually in there and the con's in full flow that you kind of see things. You go, okay, I probably wouldn't have done that again if I was here. But you kind of just learn as you go. But you know, with the venue, they're certainly supportive in terms of what we're doing. And also as well, we're able to set up the day before, which we've never been able to do that with the previous shows. So you've kind of got this mad stressful dash, you know, where you're trying to get tables laid out and then exhibitors are coming into the building and where am I, and half the tables aren't even out yet and it's like chaos.
And last time around, it was a music venue, wasn't it? And there was a gig on the night before, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there was. Yeah. So we couldn't get in and get tables and stuff out. And that was, you know, the Assembly's kind of a big multi-floor venue where you've got a basement, the main floor, and upstairs. And it was, you know, to try and get all of that set up on was challenging. So with the new venue, we're setting up the day before and stuff, which just takes so much pressure off that the tables will be out, they'll be labelled up, so when people arrive, they just go straight to their table and not have this kind of pandemonium.
Yeah, because everyone does, I mean, every exhibitor does, you know, you turn up at a con and you're already in that zone, you know, the first half an hour setting up your table, you know, there's not really like lots of conversation going on, like people are just organising their stuff and then wandering around to say hello to people, and then you're putting out your stuff and thinking, I can't have a conversation right now because I'm... because I'm trying to put myself out.
And then suddenly somebody goes, oh, they're open. You go, oh, are they? Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't set it all up yet. Yeah, I've done a bit of that. Yeah.
Or if you're Mike Garley and it's a two-day event, I remember this at Melksham, I came back to my table on the Sunday and he had turned it round the other way. cheeky Garley.
I like to know when it starts so I can just stare at my phone and not interact with people.
What for the whole duration? Is that what you?
I interact with you, you know.
Oh, hopefully I'm aware of it when you do.
Yeah. So have you tried anyone who's turned you down? Have you had any big? Is there anyone you're hoping for next year, Dan? You know, you've had like they keep promising, but.
No, not really. I've been, to be honest, we've had quite a good. I'm not daft enough to go and. Go after people that I don't think I'd be able to get.
Right, okay.
So I don't generally, you know, I've tried to say Charlie Adlard a couple of times because he doesn't live too far away from Leamington, but he always tells me to sod off.
What, does he actually use those words?
Yeah. Leave me alone.
Like, get out of my garden.
I'm outside, Charlie. And things like that. But yeah, generally it's kind of, we've had quite a good... quite a good kind of hit rate with the people that we've gone for, but I generally steer it. I don't, you know, just send like a one line email if I'm going to go and approach somebody, and I do a proper job with it. So I give them a bit of backstory about what the con was about. I'd link to reviews and, you know, like say the Down the Tubes coverage and other bits and pieces. So try and give information that shows that it's credible, not just some bloke that's just contact you because he's got a good idea about setting up a comic con. So I do try to kind of back it up, and I think that probably means that I end up getting more of a a better success rate with the people I ask. But you know, I do, you know, I kind of do target kind of people like, you know, David Lloyd was always going to be a target for me because I love V for Vendetta. I didn't in a million years expect him to turn up at my con, I'll be brutally honest with you, but you know, like I said, bad.
But it's the communication, isn't it? Communication is the key. And like, you're in constant contact with like exhibitors and like, you know, you know those potential guests and stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas you're constantly seeing these supposed Comic-Cons that just sort of pop up and they're screaming about, oh, we've got this person who's on EastEnders or something like that. But
I love that.
You love it because you hate it. You love to hate it, Tony. But essentially, if you want to speak to those people, if you try communicating with those people, it's impossible. Or it's like talking to a brick wall, isn't it? Because I know certainly Tony's asked these people, what comic guests have you got at this show? And it's always the same answer. We've got some. We'll be announcing soon.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And it's always the same three people who would go to a fridge opening. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes, we've had this conversation.
Yeah.
I think I sent you a picture on one of them.
Yeah, so you may well have done, yeah.
Oh, dear. I doubt they listen to the show, so but we won't name them.
I sent one a message saying, you know, and he said, oh, you know, we've got the listed load of TV people. And I said, is there any comic guests? And he sent me on a direct message, not on a Facebook message, even on a messenger message. He sent me a picture of him standing in front of a DeLorean with sunglasses on. I thought, oh, what a mate. Nice one.
What?
I don't know why he fucking just sent me that, but yeah.
But you know, those shows are, you know, great. There's a lot. They have a good, you know, turnout. To be honest, I'd probably put another 2,000 people on the door if I started doing stuff like that at Leamington. But it's just not what we're about as a show. It's going to be about the kind of comic books. But it is funny though.
The atmosphere is completely different though. I remember when, you know, the second show, that was the first time I was there, and the atmosphere was great. You know, everyone was there. We're comic fans. You know, and it is a family. Yeah. It's a family-friendly show as well, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I mean we've carried on that again. We see that as being quite important as well, because you know we do want to try and create where we can a new generation of comic readers. So, you know, by having with what we do is, you know, under 13s are always free with a paying adult for the con. Right. So if you're a parent looking for something to do on a Saturday, you know, if you've got a couple of kids and it's cost you a tenner to go to the con and the kids have got them free and we've got, you know, superhero face painting and balloon modelling and colouring table stuff, that's not bad, is it, for
some of the cosplay, like walking around.
Yeah.
The costumes are amazing and stuff.
Yeah.
And, talking about cosplay, calm yourself, Tony. Calm yourself.
I'm going to say nothing.
But you have is there a designated cosplay area? You've got some cosplay sort of stuff going on, haven't you?
That sounds weird.
Yeah, with the last show, it was kind of like having the cosplays go up on a stage. In hindsight, wasn't a very good idea because it meant that there were people watching the kind of cosplayers on the stage, which looked like it had about 200 more cosplayers on the stage than it actually should have done at one point. I was thinking about just slyly going out the fire exit and disappearing. but it kind of, you know, when people were watching the show, it kind of then meant that the people watching the cosplayers on the stage were then actually queuing in the aisles and stuff like that was blocking tables. So that's kind of, again, it's something you kind of learn as you go. So we are taking the kind of cosplay bit out of the main kind of hall where all the comic creators are. And there will be a part of the venue where that we're trying to put a kind of small catwalk up, kind of pinching that idea off Stuart at True Believers.
That's a good idea, you know.
In a kind of bar area having the kind of keep the kind of cosplay and stuff going on in a separate area.
Mm.
So that's the plan anyway.
That's the plan. Stay tuned in a few weeks when we tell you how well that plan went.
Yeah, Tony's being carried out for throwing his pint over someone.
Yeah. No, you're going to behave yourself, Esmond.
I might cosplay this year. You never know.
Don't.
I was going to come in my dressing gown, wasn't I? That's kind of hitchhiker's cosplay, isn't it, I suppose? Yeah. Yeah,
well, that's your excuse.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you tried any where I was going with that question a minute ago, Dan, was have you tried any publishers to get them along at all? Have you tried, I don't know, Titan or 2000 AD or someone like that?
I did try 2000 AD
right.
because they're having all of the kind of, you know, the celebrations and bits and pieces this year, but they'd come back and just saying that they've just got such a kind of busy calendar with various events going on that they couldn't support it. So I did try 2000 AD and I was trying to get Pat Mills, but didn't realise he was living in Spain when I messaged
him. Right, yeah.
And yeah, so I generally don't kind of go to the the kind of bigger, you know, publishers. 2000 AD was the first time I tried to actually get a publisher on board. But no, generally it's the, you know, the kind of just the small press guys.
Okay. Yeah. There's a few companies popping up who are worth a go. I mean, Dead Canary. I think Dead Canary aren't they?
Dead Canary are there. Yeah, Dead Canary are there. You know, it's a kind of smaller kind of publishing company. And T-Pub, like Neil Gibson of T-Pub, he's there. So yeah. He's in kind of publishing company and stuff. So yeah, there's kind of smaller kind of publishers, but not the big ones.
I mean, I would always suggest maybe Flying Eye Books, which is the kiddie end of Nobrow. I think they're always worth a shout, you know, with the Hilda books and stuff like that. I think... You know, perhaps for the future, you know, I don't know if you have already, but guys like that are worth thinking about, I think, you know.
Yeah, and there's also, as well as it was kind of like an afterthought, but for next year, I want to try and get the Phoenix involved.
Oh, excellent.
Because, you know, again, it's, you know, they're all about promoting kind of comics. Yeah. For
and if you get guys like the Etherington brothers, who we didn't chat to them. True Believers, did we, Tony? But they were just
energy. No, we didn't. Nottingham. We spoke to them a bit at Nottingham, didn't we? Yeah. But I think we all recorded it, yeah.
Yeah,
they're good things about those guys.
Yeah, they're really full on energy, those two.
Just like us.
Just like us. Right, whenever anyone comes to our table, it looks like we've just had a big meal. And we're about to have a nap. In terms of organising, though, Dan, what would you say after these first two? What's been your biggest learnings?
So I think the biggest thing to kind of... Well, that's a good question. Cheers for chucking that at me now.
That's the most journalistic thing I've said in years.
I've actually got that written. What have you learned from your mistakes? I thought it sounds a bit like a fucking board question for a job.
I think the thing that, you know, the biggest thing that we've kind of solved, I think, this year is being able to set up prior to the event. I think that it's the most stressful part of the actual whole thing. It's that kind of that setup where you're trying to get everything ready, from tables laid out to, you know, setting up banners to setting up PA systems, projectors and other bits and pieces. There's a lot to kind of cram in, especially if, you know, when you kind of generally we couldn't get into the venues until 8 o'clock, and then the con starts at 10:30, and you think, well, you've literally got nothing there and you've got to turn it into a show really within a kind of hour, and then to allow then all of the exhibitors kind of then set up. It's not fun.
I came in through the back door last year. It was pretty crammed, wasn't it?
It was chaos. Yeah. And so with the new venue, what they've actually got out the front of the Spa Centre is kind of like a loading parking area.
Right.
So literally that's going to be coned off. So as exhibitors arrive, that's why I've been asking for people to provide their car details and stuff when I've sent out info packs and that, is that, you know, we're going to basically, if you're an exhibitor, it'll be kind of somebody will be manning that entrance into that area with walkie-talkies, and it'll be a case of, well, who are you? Right. Yes, your name's on the list. Come round into this area. Don't unload your stuff until you're greeted by some of our team, who will then help get into the venue with your stuff, and just try and kind of control the you know, how people are getting in and out and things like that, instead of this kind of chaos where it is, you're quite right. I mean, last year
it sorted itself out in time, but I remember I sort of blagged it in the back door, and I sort of climbing over people who were waiting. Was there a little lift or something?
I mean, there was one guy that came last year, and he must have had about 10,000 Funko Pops with him, and he was hogging the trade elevator for about 3/4 of an hour, taking all these boxes upstairs. I was like, Jesus Christ, we're only going to have about 1,500 people here. You ain't going to sell all of them.
I bought 10.
But yeah, no, that's, I mean, it's in the, you know, the kind of getting the finer kind of details right. I mean, if you look at Stuart's con at True Believe, this is a real kind of example of how to kind of deliver and execute an indie show. You know, like a real slick operation in terms of getting in and out and things like that. And it's kind of like...
And Kev, actually. Kev does a really good job as well, I think, you know, at Nottingham.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to Nottingham, but I've never been. I've not seen it at that time. You know, when it's kind of kicking off with people getting in and stuff. But
that's you need to offer that service, don't you? Especially if you're a smaller indie show. I mean, Melksham's obviously not taking place this year, but every year you turn up there as an exhibitor, you know, there's loads of people are there to help you to your table and help you set up and stuff. If you need it, most people don't need it. I don't need it. I'm a grown man. I can do what I want.
Apparently.
Well, only if you let me.
The so spinning off from that, you've also got a comic stall, haven't you?
Yes, we have.
So how what came first, the chicken or the egg around that one? Was it the convention or the stall?
No, the convention. The convention was first. So basically what it kind of come about, we'd a couple of our friends were doing a kind of pop-up comic shop in Leamington every Saturday.
Okay.
So they kind of, you know, this is, you know, Leamington's an expensive place for retail and stuff like that. So they were kind of popping up in a pub every Saturday. And they did that for a couple of years.
I remember seeing that quite a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And they'd kind of decided to knock that on the head. So we kind of thought, well, actually, can we do something with this? You know, by having a kind of comic con and having then a comic stall and tying it all together, again, tying back into this kind of comics creativity community type stuff that we've kind of always talking about, well, partner and I. So we kind of thought, well, let's give it a go. We thought there was a market in it because of how successful the cons had been. And also we'd probably have quite a good kind of customer base to start off with, you know, where we haven't got to kind of organically grow it. We've already got, you know, thousands of followers on Twitter and Facebook and stuff that that we can try and tap into that. So yeah, we're kind of talking about it last year. My partner finished work and then we thought, well, yeah, sod it, let's give it a go, see what happens. So that's where Spartown Comics came about.
Have you always been a big fan of comics, have you, Dan, or what's your sort of history? What have you liked in the past? And
I'd say I'm casual, casual kind of. I've always been a kind of casual comic reader generally, and when I was younger, more of the kind of, you know, DC type stuff. So I'm certainly by no means a, you know, a comics historian or have tons and bags of comic knowledge, although that knowledge has increased quite significantly in the last few years since running a comic convention. But you know, back when I started the con, I didn't have a lot of kind of comic knowledge, being honest. But yeah, so it's and my partner Lisa had literally none, and she's running Spartown Comics, and the amount of stuff that she's picked up and learned and is teaching me on since kind of September when we launched it is just unbelievable.
Yeah, but she's a big reader. You're both big readers now. I know before you came on air, I don't think it's any secret, you were saying your wife was reading a comic to your son, sort of get him to go to sleep and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And we do that quite a lot. He always wants me to read The Walking Dead to him, though, just before bed. But with Spartown and stuff and Spartown Comics and the Comic Con, you know, I've kind of become a real advocate of small press, you know, and generally, I do read stuff by Image, and I do read, you know, the odd kind of DC thing and stuff like that. But, you know, kind of Lisa's picked up a lot of knowledge on the kind of the mainstream stuff as well as the Image. And then she's learning about manga and other bits and pieces. So actually, as between the two of us, it kind of complements it quite well. That, you know, is I know the indie scene, she knows the kind of what is now the, you know, the kind of mainstream comic scene, and we can use that to our advantage, which is quite good.
So what titles she didn't read comics before, what titles are her favorites, would you say, at the moment?
She's just finished Lock and Key.
That's a series I really need to read.
Yeah,
I've got the first trade sitting here. I've had it for like 2 years and haven't read it. That might give me the reason to read it now, I think.
We got the whole thing. It was because being now that we're a trader, we get invited to the Diamond Comics Dealer Day in London.
Look at you. So,
Yeah. So we got a good goodie bag, and it had the whole kind of set of the lock. And I think it's five or six.
Oh wow!
Yeah. Amber.
Nice one.
In a nice kind of sleeve and stuff like that. So she'd kind of binge read that over a few weeks and absolutely loved it. But you know, I've been recommending stuff to her, you know, like Twisted Dark and bits and pieces and stuff like that. I'd kind of got from you the beauty and stuff like that. But yeah, she's kind of very much a kind of, she's not really into superheroes, kind of Image and IDW stuff and things like that. She's more into than kind of Marvel and DC.
That's what's fantastic about comics right now, though, isn't it? I mean, when you say to most people, you talk about comics, they immediately think of the superheroes. But when you look into the comic scene, there's just so much. There's something for everyone.
What do you have to have? Because you have to be careful about what you stock. Because I suppose you've got a number of standing order customers now as well, haven't you? So you will be stocking the mainstream. But what sort of thing are you finding that sells well at the moment? What are you finding that is a good thing to introduce new readers to, perhaps?
The DC stuff, like with the Rebirth and that, you know, there's a lot of kind of, you know, high churn of that. And we've got a lot
still
of
busy
of,
around that, are they? Or?
Yeah. Right. We've got lots of kind of, you know, we have got a lot of kind of sub-customers that are into the era DC. We have started cutting back Marvel because it's just not selling. You know, and having a store, we have to be kind of quite ruthless with what we stock. So, you know, we'll take a punt on something. If it doesn't shift, it'll get cut and we won't order it again. So we're kind of stocking the stuff that we know what our customers want. But we have a lot of customers that do read a lot of Image and Boom and other bits and pieces as well. So it's a real kind of mixed bag. But generally, you'd find it would be DC Rebirth, or it'd be you know, kind of stuff by Image and the kind of smaller publishers than Marvel, like from a sub perspective, is pretty much non-existent.
Wow, it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Okay.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. So I've heard a few people say it, to be honest. A few of the other retailers and stuff I've spoken about, I've heard people talking about it. That just a lot of people just think a lot of the new Marvel stuff shite.
Okay. As I know, there's a little network. You're in a little network of. I came over the stall and we were chatting about it, and you were saying, you know, if you haven't got something or someone else has got something, you know, you're quite happily swap with other retails.
We work in kind of. We work closely with Glyn Smith, who runs Comic Connections in Banbury. So he, I've known him met him since launching kind of Leamington Comic Con. And I also live in Banbury, so he's kind of, you know, local.
Oh, okay.
And he'd been great with, you know, kind of comic knowledge. He was giving, like when Lisa was kind of setting up Spartown, you know, he let her come in for a few days to kind of do work experience, see how it works, see how the diamond process worked and all of that kind of stuff. And we're also kind of selling some of his comics on our stall as well. So you know, we don't want to, you know, I don't think it's a great business model having a comic shop with, you know, 400,000 back issues in long boxes that's just money money.
Tony would love that, though.
I want to live there.
It's great if you're a punter, not if you're And it's kind of so we don't want to have, you know, that's what I say, we're kind of quite ruthless with what we stock. So with what we stock what we sell, so that then we don't get lumbered with tons and tons of back issues, because we generally sell and get it on the nose in terms of what we buy, we sell.
Because I think that you're situated is, it's very, apart from the standing order customers, it's very much people walk past for their kids and go, oh, look at that, isn't it? I think you're dependent on that. So you've got to have comics, you know, facing outwards, you know, something that somebody's going to see an impulse buy, almost, I think, haven't you?
Yeah,
you know,
like... we do get an awful lot of that. You know, we do get an awful lot of that. So, but we have got back issues on the store, but they're generally the back issues of Comic Connections, not ours. So we're helping shift Banbury's comic shop's back issues and taking a cut on it, which is
right,
which works for both of us. And then you're right with the network. You know, we've kind of you know, with our we deal a lot with Reggie at Destination Venus.
Right, so, yeah.
He'll, and we'd only kind of got chatting after he'd been on your con.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and so, you know, he'll send us stuff, we'll send him stuff, and also Lucky Target as well, Orbital, Gosh. So, yeah, and Hiding Geek in Worcester, so, and as well as
the family shop. So yeah.
We've got a really good kind of network that's, you know, beneficial for everyone because they're selling something that's just stuck on the shelves and, you know, we're fulfilling customer orders, which is great.
Yeah, that's great news, isn't it?
I really like that idea.
We are a little bit, aren't we? Yeah. That's good.
One day there'll be an Awesome Comics podcast wedding ceremony, won't there? We'll have to do a special.
One day two people get married due to our show. Yeah. I always wonder whether two people have done it due to the show. I'm always curious about that. You know, I'm always asking you about that.
Oh, Tony. We'll never be highbrow, will we?
Yes. If you don't mind me asking, Dan, what's the long-term plan? Will it be a shop, or are you looking to move into a bigger premises? Because it's certainly going well. Whenever I come past the stall, I always manage to snatch a couple of seconds talking to you, and then it's sort of customer.
I mean, long-term, obviously, we've kind of got a vision of what we want it to be. I don't know whether any of our competitors are listening. So do I share the crown jewels now? No. I mean, long term, yes. I think having a kind of bricks and mortar store would be where we want to get to. But it's got to be somewhere that can make sure, you know, it isn't just, I just don't want a small pokey shop that we can't do anything with it. It's going to have to be something that we can use, and it can be used on a, you know, in the evening, whether or not, you know, we've been doing drink and draw, say, for example, in bars. It's like, well, actually, I'd like to have a premises where you could host those things within the store itself. And then, you know, not only would you drink and draw, but then you might be able to sell a few comics in the evening as well and try and create that hub around the shop.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of where we'd want to.
We get games nights as well. It's quite common for shops to do that now, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's, you know, we've kind of got a vision in terms of what we'd like it to look like. Whether or not we ever get to that point, only time will tell, I guess. But we certainly have a very clear vision in terms of what we want Spartan Comics to be. Which will probably mean we'll end up rebranding all of the Comic Con and everything to how it all looks consistent and stuff like that.
One
battle at a time at the moment.
But you can honestly say that starting to do a Comic-Con has changed your life, hasn't it, really?
Yes. Yeah, I'm not sure it's for the better.
I think it's like anyone... doing this podcast.
Yeah.
I'm joking. No. Yeah, I think that we're trying to do it different. You know, we are trying to do it different. I don't know how successful I'll be, you know, at doing that yet, but we are trying to do it differently, you know, with the shop, with the events, with the community type thing, you know. Yeah. I mean, just doing things like where we, you know, pop up at the local library and we've donated comics, you know, to the library. I think, Vince, if I remember right, you'd sent me some stuff as well that I gave to the library a couple of years ago.
There was a photo of Batman holding the Red Mask from Mars.
Yes. Yeah. I remember quite clearly.
And things like that, because comics need new readers and they need people to go out there and to pound the pavement and to really sort of shout about it, because otherwise no one's going to check out this medium which doesn't sell in huge numbers, certainly anyone from small press, every con is almost a major con no matter how small it is, because everyone wants to sell as much as they can. So you know, if you're involved in the scene in any way, people have to act like, well, they have to follow your lead, Dan. They have to go out there and just shout about it as much as they can, and also get it into the hands of people who might not necessarily know about it, like the kids and like the libraries and stuff like that. You know,
so there's so many crowds you've got to attract these days. You know, there's so many little subcultures even within comics that you've kind of got to get engaged with. You know, being that event in that time in the calendar. You know, and it's Leamington next weekend. You know, it's like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know. So you soon see when a convention's on, because everyone in the morning is going, oh, who's going to Leamington? I'm on the train. Or who's going to here? You know, I'm almost there. I stayed overnight. Anyone going for breakfast? You know, you get all that, don't you, as well, you know?
Yeah.
I think it is, you know, definitely got to kind of, I totally agree with, got to kind of shout from the rooftops about what it is you're doing. And, you know, there's nothing more, nothing bugs me more than seeing shameless plug before somebody's about to go and shout about something they've created or doing. It's like, well, there's nothing shameless in promoting your work, and do more of it. You know,
don't be,
you know, embarrassed to try and sell or raise awareness of what you're doing, because it's, that's one of the biggest parts of making it a success.
Yeah, and I think the people who turn up at your convention, are, there is an added responsibility to them as well to say they're doing it. So if you're, for example, they're a guest, or you're, or even if they've just got a table, it's down to them to say, look, I'll be at Leamington, you know, next weekend. Yeah. You know, I'll be selling my stuff. Please come and visit me. Yeah. You know, yeah. Or I'll be doing a talk. Come and visit us. You know, yeah. It's that sort of thing.
It is a bit of, that is a bit of a bugbear of mine.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
Because some are better than others.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if I kind of do a shout out or something on social media, and this is not direct to anyone. So, but you know, where you're kind of going, oh, so and so's at the event. Da 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 da. Get your tickets. Da da da. And then they like the tweet. It's like, well, nobody's going to have seen that.
Press the other one, you know, the one that used
exactly the same amount of energy as that little heart that you've just pressed.
But oh, I agree completely.
That's half a centimeter to the left of it.
Yeah.
Just no.
But that also follows through, like, on the actual day as well, because once the people are through the door, at the end of the day, your job's done, Dan. Do you know what I mean? Like, as soon as the people are through that door, it's on the shoulders of the people who have their tables, who have their comics, to sell and to have a good time and to make people feel welcome. And, like, you know, if you have a shit day at a convention, but it's been a really busy convention, you can't immediately sort of, like, just scream at the organizer immediately if you haven't done any hard work to try and sell your wares, which some people are quick to do that sometimes, I think.
Yeah. I completely agree,
which is why, though, as well, I think there's a responsibility, though, on kind of show organisers like myself, not to create a show that's far bigger than the potential people can get through the door. And I think that's where I think some of these other shows have fallen foul, is that they're, you know, putting on 100-150 tables, which is great, but if you're only getting 2,000 people through the door, thinking, well, is there enough cash within that venue so that everybody's got a fighting chance of having a half decent day?
There's some algorithm somewhere, isn't there? There's got to be some kind of,
Well, I don't know whether I've mentioned it to you guys before. I've spoken to my board people with it in the past. It's I work on a 40 people through the door for every table.
Right, good.
So that's kind of what I think is a fair. There's no science behind that. I'm not bright enough to work out the, you know, that part of it. But it's,
so you got that 40 chances to sell something, and kind of, isn't it? Yeah.
So with, like, this con, I've got 35 exhibitors. So my target is 1,400 people there. I think that maths is right. You know, that's kind of it. And I go, well, can I get 1,400 people? Well, I got just under that in 2015. I don't think that's an unrealistic number.
Let's not forget, at the end of the day, I mean, we're talking from a small press sort of perspective, etc. But you want the people who actually go to that Comic-Con on the day, the visitors, they're the ones who have to leave happy. Do you know what I mean? That's the way you've got to look at it, isn't it? Once they've got their ticket and they're through that door, you really want them to just have a fantastic day and stay there all day and probably end up being hassled by me and Tony or something.
Sexually harassed by
us. No, I wouldn't say that, Tony.
I wouldn't.
No, absolutely, yeah, definitely, completely. Tony, but you're quite right. There is, you know, once the show runners, you know, responsibility to put on a good show that's and promote it and not stop promoting that event, not just create it and then build it and they'll come. You've got to, you know, people say to, like, Lisa and I all the time that we don't shut up on social media ever.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's quite relentless. You know, because you have to do that. You have to be constant. You have to be constantly promoting about your event, because how do you, you know, people won't know that you're actually there unless you tell people that you're there.
Yeah.
You know, and that's quite right. Then once people are in the door, then it's kind of over to you.
Yeah. Do you have a hashtag yet?
Yes.
Oh, and what is that hashtag?
LCC 2017.
Oh.
I'm writing that down now. I've written it down. Yeah.
I was expecting Tony to think, hashtag, oh, you're such a hipster, Vince.
Yeah. It's coming, isn't it? Yeah. I'm
the only one that's using it.
Yeah.
Not anymore. We want everyone who's listening to this show, if they're going to the show or if they're exhibiting, use that hashtag. Come on, let's get it trending. Isn't that what the kids do these days?
I think so.
Snapchat. So this year you've got panels as well. So do you know what the panel's going to be yet, Dan? Or
yeah, I've got a few bits and pieces just to finalise at the moment. We're going to be this one's for you, Tony. We're going to be having a cosplay panel. So
yeah, I think I'm on that one.
I think you're there. Yeah. Front row. We've got Mike Garley's doing a panel or a discussion on the kind of changing like landscape of comics in terms of the medium. So like from paper to digital to web, you know, all kinds of different things. So he's going to be doing a talk on that. You guys obviously will be doing a kind of awesome pod live.
We prefer it as the Awesome Comics Burlesque Show. I think is how we're currently
talking about dancing, jazz, haberdashery, and baking the perfect Victoria sponge. It's going to be quite a panel, I tell you.
Well, I'm sure, with Leamington, the town that it is, haberdasheries and Victoria sponge is probably quite a weekend.
That's why we're the perfect guests. We're going to bring people in.
We're going to bring in a lot of old people who smell of piss. Yeah, so
that'll probably be us, Tony, smelling the piss.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And there's a couple of other Neil Gibson from T-Pubs going to be doing a talk that we're just finalising at the moment. So there's a few bits and pieces that we're still kind of just firming up. So there'll be stuff kind of going on throughout the day.
Yeah. On the day, like, well, and leading up to it, where can people find out about the panels and stuff?
They'll be, once they're ready, they'll be on the there. If you go to spartowncomics.co.uk, there's a Leamington Comic Con section. Once we've got the schedule confirmed, then that will be posted within the Lem Comic Con part of our website.
Which is a new thing, isn't it? Isn't it? Your good lady wife has created that webpage. I was looking at it earlier. It's very good. Yeah,
yeah, it's very good.
She's built that from scratch, basically. So and it's kind of got, you know, it kind of talks about what Spartown Comics is about, our events, comic cons. She's even got a shop in there, you know, so an online stall and stuff now. So it's really, really good.
I know. I read that article. I spoke to you about it, which it was your good lady wife who wrote about what you should expect basically from a comic con. Very well written. I really like that article.
It was the clickbait title of why Leamington Comic Con might not be for you. I did tell her, I said, Tony's message, say that's a great piece of
it was good, really good, yeah.
But she's, that's her background in PR and marketing.
So
she does like to
so should we have had her on the show instead of you? Is that what you're saying, Dan?
Yeah, she probably sounds a lot more intelligent than I do. So. She's far more engaging.
Yeah, well, we're thoroughly looking forward to the show.
Yeah, we are. We really are. Yeah, we're talking about it for a while now. Yeah, we've got a few plans.
I mean, the last time we were at Leamington Comic Con, there was the infamous Peach Stone incident.
Yeah, that was there. I forgot that was there.
Which is one of our comedic gems.
I know that Harrower and Lambo, who are like a double act now, will be there as well this year.
That's Matt Harrower and Mark Lamming. It's not some sort of comedy puppy detective duo. But it is going to be a fantastic day, I think. And we're thoroughly looking forward to it and figuring out what our panel's going to be. Now, I think you just said the URL, but for anyone who wants to find out more details about the show and where to get tickets, etc., where can they go, Dan?
Yeah, if you go to spartowncomics.co.uk, and there is the Leamington Comic Con section within the website. Well, kind of there's some spotlights on the guests and bits that are appearing at the show. There's a link to take you off to the ticketing website, and there's details around the cosplay competition and other bits and pieces. And like I said, that'll be kind of in the next week or so. That'll just be kind of tidied up with a more kind of a planned event schedule. But yeah, if you head to our Spartown Comics website, you can find out details there, and you can help us out by maybe buying the odd comic online as well. I'd really appreciate it.
Did you want to run through some of the exhibitors you got turning up, or did I drop that on your toes too quickly, or have you got that ready?
No. We've got so Neil Gibson from T Pub is coming back. Dead Canary coming.
Yeah, we like those guys. They're a great company. Yeah,
and we've actually just going off on a bit of a tangent. We're actually selling their comics at Spartown as well. So,
oh, good.
I'm sure we've got some Canary product on there because
the Last Driver is brilliant. Absolutely.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Because we've started to we've put a small press section on our store. So, cool. So we're trying to.
And I know they're friends with Daryl Thorpe as well, aren't they? They certainly had a table next to each other at Nottingham. I think they get on quite well. Yeah.
Yeah. And Daryl's coming, obviously, because he's launching a comic.
Daryl does some great. I love Daryl's prints, sort of graffiti style, sort of comedic sci fi type stuff. They're really good. Yeah. I've got one on the wall here. Yeah. Really nice.
Got a really, really kind of unusual style, but it's great. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. Very enthusiastic guy as well. Great company.
We've got to know Daryl quite well since we've been to Spartan. Because again, he's another one. It's quite funny. It's not quite funny. It's just coincidental that so many of the people that are kind of coming to the show have got ties with Leamington. So Daryl used to live in Leamington. Montenero used to live and work in Leamington, around the corner from where I used to live in Leamington, actually.
Oh, okay. Didn't realise that. Yeah.
Yeah. Sonia Leong had connections with being at Warwick University and stuff. So there's quite, a lot of people that have got connections to the town.
Yeah. Oh, nice. So who else got coming?
Yeah. So we've got Paul Rainey. Got the guys there from the Inheritic. Don't know whether you've come across those guys before. Andy Clift.
Andy's a good lad. We love Andy. Yeah, he's really good.
The Attic Studios guys.
Yep. They're great guys.
Yeah, Time Bomb Comics, so Steve Tanner.
Awesome.
Got the GB's Comics, Gav Mitchell and Emily Owen.
Yeah, never heard of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Howlbound Media.
Yeah.
Just kind of rattling a few of these off the top of my head. Good comics are there.
Very impressive the top of your head.
Yeah.
You got John Lates there, is he? Or?
John Lates there as well. Yeah. Yeah, so we've got there's about 35. I think it's 35.
There's a lot of good people there. That's the cream of the crop there, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of cracking small presses there.
Lots
good.
Of different types of books as well. So if you're going to the show, you're going to be spoilt for choice.
So. Yeah, well, that kind of comes into what we do. You know, we don't just do a kind of scattergun approach and just let anybody come into the con. It's we do generally kind of go through, especially with a lot of the creators that I know, it's kind of like, well, are they the right kind of fit for the con? Do I think that if they're going to come to the con, are they going to be engaging with the, with potential punters? So we do put a lot of thought into kind of who kind of gets in, and stuff. And then next year we're kind of going to change how it works. I had 250 people apply for tables this year.
Oh wow! Okay,
which is just like, which is a bloody nightmare to manage.
Yeah. True, but it says a lot about your reputation. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, people have heard about it and they've heard it's a good one to go to.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're kind of, what we're going to be doing with the next show is kind of make it invitation only. So instead of this kind of painful process of people applying online and then checking them out to see what their comics are like through websites and stuff, I'm going to save myself a months of work and then just go to people that I think will want to attend or didn't get in this year say, well, do you want to have a table this year? If they say yes, then I'll send them an invoice for the table, basically, and try and do it a bit differently and easier and stop wasting, because it takes up a lot of my time, but also I don't want to mess people around. So having 250 applicants, I've only you know, there was the last few I'd actually said last week that they didn't have a table. Well, you know, I'm doing it on my own, and it's not good enough to kind of let people hang in for months.
So have you got any back issue sellers as well, have you? Or
yes. We'll have so obviously our own very own Spartown Comics will be there, and also our friends at Comic Connections as well. So so they're going to have basically kind of, you know, 18 foot of table space with mainly back issues and stuff on it.
So that's our morning sorted, Tony.
That's all we're going straight away.
So again, it's kind of, you know, again, this thought gone into it. So with Spartan, we're going to, you know, stop more of the kind of newer stuff. But then we know we've got somebody that's going to bring a lot of back issues and stuff. So we kind of have all bases covered.
Nice. Cool. Something for nice everyone.
Definitely.
We've got a few ideas for what we're going to be doing at the show as
Watch the space.
But it's going to be a cracking day, I think. So, and you're going to hear more about it because next week we've got the King's Legacy guys going on.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about it then. Yeah, so as well.
It's almost like we're sponsored by Dan.
To be fair, I do appreciate you because you guys always speak very well of the con and always
good. We have good fun with it, mate. Yeah, definitely.
Always promoting it and stuff. So I do really appreciate
that. That's silly.
Giving you regular shouts out on social about the pod and stuff as well. So I do appreciate
it. That's it. It's just a massive Dutch rudder going on, isn't it? Oh, don't start that again, Tony. Dan's going to be with us for the rest of the show, and hopefully he's going to be recommending something for you lovely people a bit later. But we've got an extra special treat for you this week. Convention week. We got our panel from True Believers 2017. We got the audio for that.
Thanks, Stu.
Thank you very much, Stu, and the guys from True Believers for sending that through. It's come out quite clear, Tony. It's come out quite nicely.
Oh, God, is it? Because I was off my nut during that.
I know you were.
That's true. I'd like to say, I say stupid stuff. I think I cheer at one point, stupidly. And I also don't say much at one point because I was sort of nodding off. But no, it wasn't due to the guests.
What do you mean you were nodding off?
Well, I hadn't slept for about 48 hours, did I?
That's so no sort excuse. Of,
Yeah, I mean, you did look a bit ropey when I saw you in the morning.
Thanks, mate. Cheers, Tom.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? Yeah. No, your friends are, don't you?
Yeah.
He said his bit, so he can say whatever he wants now. That's what it is.
Both great guests, wasn't it?
Yeah. Here's our panel from True Believers 2017, which was Making Awesome Comics with the marvellous Chris Imber and Rachel Smith. Yeah. Here you go.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Making Awesome Comics panel. It's been a long day, hasn't it, everyone? We're all a little bit frazzled. Tony's been travelling for 24 hours, so he's slightly mental by now.
No heckling from the audience already.
So this should be an interesting 40 odd minutes. My name is Vince Hunt, creator of the Red Mouse from Mars, and joining me for the last panel of the day is the last panel of the day, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Is writer, Down the Tubes contributor, and one of my co-hosts on the best comic book podcast you've never heard of. It's the Awesome Comics podcast. That's Mr. Tony Esmond.
Thank you. We didn't bring any flyers either, did we?
No, we
didn't. Well, everyone listened.
Because
I think they're all personal friends of ours.
Essentially. thank you for joining us for tea and cake afterwards. No, and we're joined on our first ever True Believers panel, and this is only our second panel.
The last one was terrible.
After Car Crash Fest 2016. by two amazing creators who've agreed to join us before we started Blackmail Tactics. Hopefully you've met them and bought all their awesome comics already. If not, then let me introduce them to you. First up is an artist and one part of Reckless Hero Studios. He smashed onto the indie scene with titles like The Last Sheriff and Operation Boom. He's the kind of artist that makes us all sick in the best kind of way. And he also plays a mean guitar to boot.
So I've heard.
It's Chris Imber.
Hello.
Do you notice we didn't get applause, Tony, but the guests are.
That's because you're not Chris Imber.
Next is a creator who, after titles such as The Rabbit, House Party, Artificial Flowers, Don't Read the Intro I've Written for You, and The New Wired Up Wrong, is one of the UK's busiest rising stars. Not only that, but she's one of the only people we know that can make a one-page comic about going into a big Asda, a laugh-out-loud experience. It's Rachel Smith.
Significantly better. Than
significantly better.
I think I contributed to that point, haven't you, though, to be honest.
Now we've got the formalities out of the way, let's get on with what everyone came here to see, which is the arm wrestling competition.
Yeah.
No. This panel's called Making Awesome Comics. Hopefully, you may have listened to the show and know it's all about making comics, but let's kick off with this to our lovely guests. What made you want to make your own comics? Ladies first? Chris.
I refuse to answer. If it's awkward air silence, I don't care. Yes. Always
answer.
Rach.
I guess my first experience with comics was when I was in primary school. And when I was a kid, I loved Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, I was worryingly into Sonic the Hedgehog. And my dad bought me the Sonic the Comic, like, issue one. And I remember just... I was so excited to read this comic that I was, like, shaking when I got it home. I was, like, really excited to read about Sonic. But, yeah, I was so excited about this comic. And then I didn't read comics for a while. And when I became that was good. That was a good story. But I kind of fell out with comics a little bit in my sort of teenage years because I had a lot of prejudices about comics. Like, I thought they were just superheroes and that didn't really turn me on. But then I read Scott Pilgrim and I read Love and Rockets and I read, you know, all the great ones that aren't about superheroes. And I was like, oh, comics can just be about real life. And then I was reminded of being excited about this Sonic the Comic. I was like, do you know what? This could be something that I could do. Because I like telling stories and I like drawing. And for me, that was a good marriage of both of my skills.
It was like a realization that you'd always wanted to do it, even though
yes,
you didn't.
Yes, yeah. Because I thought comics were like a different thing than they were.
Yeah.
So it was my own stupidity that I didn't do it earlier. Is that an okay answer? I hope that's an okay answer.
Chris has got to be better than that. Chris.
From a young age, no. My first experience was a friend from primary school was literally throwing out a load of old comics. And I had loads of Marvel UK Thundercats and Transformers, like the big A4 size ones. And I remember, like, it was really bizarre because my bedroom, like where the chest of drawers was in my bedroom, I didn't have clothes in there. It was just full of these free comics that he'd given me, and I'd make my way through them. So I think it kind of permeated through that. I was always into, I guess, the cliched, like the toy side of things in the 80s. Thundercats, Transformers.
Toys.
Yeah, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and everything like that. And that inspired me. And every time I'd then go to my mum or my dad and say, can you draw me this? Can you do it? And they'd just say, no, if you want to do it yourself. Which I'm kind of thankful for now.
So being good at drawing came after you read the comics. So you didn't discover, think, I'm quite a good drawer, I'll draw comics. You like comics and then you drew.
Yeah, I started by straight up copying panels from a comic. And I still recommend that to anybody. I still say that's the way to get started. So it permeated through that, and I used to go down to my newsagents every week with like my 50p, and I had a subscription. I think it was to the Transformers comic.
Okay.
Yeah, and then they used to advertise the other comics in the back. And Combat Colin, Combat Colin?
Well, Lou Stringer.
Yes.
My friend Lou Stringer.
Yeah, it used to be in the back of the Transformers comic. So
apparently, there's a rumor that he's coming back, Combat Colin.
Brilliant.
That's what I keep being told by Lou. Yeah.
He needs to.
Some of the
Sonic the Comic as well.
He did, didn't he?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
A common theme.
Oh, so the circle of life.
Yeah.
obviously, you loved like those comics. But then, what initially made you want to start? You know, when you have like maybe you wanted to draw Sonic or maybe you wanted to draw Transformers. But what gave you that initial push to actually want to create my own character? You know, I've got a story I want to tell. It will be this. What moment was that?
Me first.
Go for it.
Well, when I first realised I would quite enjoy doing comics, I felt like it was this very closed off society. Like everyone was saying, "Oh, you have to work for Marvel or you have to work for DC." And then, I joined Twitter and found some comic people, and I began to realise that it isn't this big club. You can just go out and do it by yourself. You can just you can either start by just photocopying your comics when you finished work at your office job. You can just sneak and do like 100 copies, which is how I started.
I feel like this is, you know, it's a confession of some kind, isn't it?
Yeah, just print them off your work computer. And, but then you can just pay like a printer and do them yourself, and you can put it all together in InDesign. You don't need to have these huge companies behind you. And in fact, if you ever do want to work for them, it's kind of impressive to them that you've gone out and done it by yourself. Because it's a huge undertaking, and I'm probably going off topic a bit now, but you know, if anyone here does want to do comics and wants to get started, it's you know, doing your first comic self-published, it gives you an idea of all the different jobs that are involved, you know, like the printing and the editing and the marketing and all the things you don't think of. Yeah, I guess. I kind of realised that you could just do it by yourself. So I did.
You pretty much just went off and started by yourself. Chris, like you were with Reckless, was it like a gang that got together? I say a gang like you're the Warriors. But
we are the Warriors. yes, I think we're the worst Warriors ever. I'm sorry, I just had a really horrible moment where I've realised that we're really sad. I think for me, I always liked creating characters. And I was lucky enough to have two friends who basically wanted to create a vehicle for my work, which was, you know, even now I owe them so much. So the idea of making a comic came from the fact that I had all these characters and people were saying, well, you know, it'd be good to see them in a story. They were very much getting at the point that it was meaningless having a roster of characters.
Yeah.
And just because they looked cool, or I thought they looked cool, didn't mean anything unless you fleshed them out and went into it. So that's where it came from us. It was a vehicle to kind of have a property.
But what finally inspired you to think, right, let's do it, let's just go ahead?
On my 30th birthday, my same friends took me to a Comic-Con, took me to London MCM, and that was my first experience. And to be honest, I still remember walking down, it was at the Excel in London, and there's a little bridge that kind of goes across the entrance. And it was even a bit much for me. I was intimidated by the whole thing, because I thought I liked it.
Yeah.
But these were people who were so passionate about it. And I think from walking around that event and seeing, like you say, that anybody could have a go and push forwards, made me go, I should do this. I should put my money where my mouth is and say, if I'm walking around going like, that's all right, yeah, quite like that, that's okay, then actually do it.
Yeah.
And you realise when you do your first one that actually, for all how easy it is to walk around and criticise and say, well, that's okay, that's all right, that the art could be better than that, or the story wasn't great. When you actually make one yourself and you realise how many pitfalls there are.
Yeah.
No matter how well you think you're doing, it's a sobering experience to make your first comic.
Oh, God, yeah. Mm. Yeah. And also, I think just jumping into that self-publishing world, it's like going from the black and white at the beginning of The Wizard of Oz to when they go to colour. As soon as you're behind a table and the world just opens up. Like, this world of, like, and there's so many nice people and there's so many great creators. It only spurs you on, doesn't it, to do more.
Oh, for sure.
Now, what's been the hardest lesson you've had to learn so far? You can be as brutally honest as you want.
Sure. Okay,
I'll... It's not had anything to do with me.
Okay. Humility.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for every time you put out a picture and you post it on Twitter and everything, I think you can disconnect from it. You can kind of say, well, I've put that out, it's not that good. But in the back of your mind, you've put that out because you think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And actually, when you start to get criticism and critique, which is so important, and it is so important that people speak their mind to you and let you know what they think is good, what they think is bad, what you could improve on, I think that's a bitter pill to swallow at first. I think that's really hard. And you do have to, if you want to get better at something, you have to take a step back from how good you think you might be, and you actually have to start listening to people. And you have to listen to opinions, and that's hard.
I think the comics world, there's a little bit of like everyone feels they've got to say everything is good.
Mm.
You know, there's a bit of sort of kissy kiss on the, yeah, oh, yeah, that's a brilliant picture. But that's not really what you need, is it?
No, no, not at all.
You only want to get a better, you know, critique on the next one and next one, but it's not going to help you get any better. Yeah.
No, and so I think when you come out and you think, oh, actually, you know, what we release, I'm sure it's going to do very well. And then you're at a convention and you're slaving away to sell your book, and you think it shouldn't be this difficult to push what you've created.
Yeah.
But it is. But that's, you grow to enjoy that, I think. And yeah, you grow to enjoy that challenge. And you, the more that you do, the better you see yourself getting at the craft. And I mean, at Reckless Hero, we're a long way off where we want to be. We always have been. But it was that.
That's the key, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's important.
Where you
want to
be is always tomorrow.
Yes.
You should always be striving for that.
And I think sometimes when you, this sounds a bit odd as well, when you feel like you're better at something or that something's a little bit more proficient, it's not necessarily better in the direction that you wanted to go. You might have a fixed picture in your head of how you want your certain style to develop, and sometimes your hands and your pens and your brain betray you, and you go down an avenue that you never thought you were going to.
Hmm.
And it's allowing yourself to do that as well.
But don't you feel, I mean, we've had a number of behind closed doors conversations, you and I, not knowing anyone, Chris, where people literally put their stuff up and seem to declare themselves as the second coming.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they do. They do.
You can say it's me.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
You said it was Dan.
Yeah.
But that must get you go as well, because you're trying to hold it back and think, you know, let's be sensible.
It does. Because yeah, saying humility makes it sound like I'm like I arrived on this comic scene and thought, wait till you see this. This is gonna be. And that was never the case, honestly. I'm a relatively humble person, I like to think. But yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
That people have kind of elevated to a certain level and then think, therefore, they hold all the answers. And and nobody holds all the answers.
Rachel, do you have all the answers?
No. No.
Not even close.
No.
But what's been the difficult... Because obviously Chris had a very different sort of like path as well to what you're doing. What's been the difficult moments for you?
I think just like starting and...
Is that the most intimidating bit to actually finally put your...
It's not that it's intimidating, it's that you're going to be talking to no one for like 2 years. Like no one's... Because it takes a long time to build an audience,
that's like
I think.
Podcast.
Yeah. if for 2 years his place would be packed.
And yeah, just realizing that and coming to terms with that and thinking, okay, I'm going to have to work really hard and it's a very thankless job when you're not getting anything back.
On the flip side, do you remember some of the people who were there at the beginning?
Yeah.
They're the special ones.
Yeah, I guess.
That laugh said no. They mean nothing to me.
Where are we going with this? Where are we going?
No, actually, Lee Walton from Fantagraphics was the first person to ever say you should be doing comics, because he saw my illustrations. Yeah. I'm still in touch with him. Like, he's a great guy. But yeah, just that struggle, I suppose.
So and patience.
And patience, yes.
And not, humility.
I'm not very good at patience. Mm. I know.
Yeah. You're not very good at patience.
I'm not very good at being patient. But so that's why, I guess that's why it was the hardest thing for me. Mm. Was.
I think it's quite hard for a lot of people actually, because they do expect.
Did you expect us to say that bit where you have to draw hands? With people, Vince. With people.
Or feet. Or feet.
Cars. For me, it's cars.
Cars.
I hate drawing cars.
No, I tell you the worst one. Horses.
I don't mind horses.
I don't mind horses either.
I'd rather someone be riding a horse than driving a car.
I'll go with cars.
Okay, so we talked about the hardest things, but let's spin it and make it positive. What has been some of your highlights since you've been self-publishing? It doesn't have to be a book or anything. It could be a con experience. What's been some of the best things?
You want me to tell the Rosie story again?
No. Well, you have to now.
Oh, were you not there? Well, I was telling you the first time. In TCAF. Well, I'll just tell it, shall I? Okay, this is literally the highlight of my entire career. I was at TCAF, the Toronto Comic Arts Festival, and a little girl there, Rosie, her mum bought her a copy of The Rabbit, and And she was really shy. She was like, you know, she was probably like pulling on her mum's sleeve, like, can I have this, please? And she didn't want to talk to me because she was really shy. And her mum was like, yeah, okay, I'll get this. And I always do a sketch in them, and I put to Rosie, and I drew her the rabbit that's in the rabbit. But she, because I had all my comics like in front of me on the stands, she couldn't see me doing this, so it's kind of a surprise. And I gave her the book, and she walked away from me immediately. There was no kind of thank you. She was just like, I'm gone. But I saw her in the distance, and she opened it, and just her face when she saw this drawing that I'd done was so, she was just astounded that I'd just done this in like 2 minutes. And I saw her, and she got her mum again. She pulled on her sleeve. She was like, look, look. And her mum was like, oh, that's brilliant, isn't it? Oh, she probably didn't say brilliant. Americans don't really say, Canadians don't really say brilliant. Whatever. And then she was like, brilliant. Brilliant is a British word though, isn't it? Anyway, it doesn't matter. And Rosie closed the book, and then she hugged it. She hugged my book, and I nearly cried. I was so, you know, this is amazing. So yeah, that was my highlight. That was the really good. So, and it just made me think, you know, because I do the Doctor Who comics and stuff, and some, you know, people come to me at conventions with these huge stacks of Doctor Who comics that they want me to sign, and I'm always really happy to see those guys, but they're not who I make comics for. I make comics for Rosie, so it was nice to kind of have that reinforced for me.
Awesome comics podcast appearance.
I was at the highlight, it was good, yeah. But there was this time I was at the Canadian Arts Festival. And this young girl called Rosie.
I assume she came.
Yeah. Everyone in a line.
What?
No, actually, it's funny you say that, because one of the highlights for me is the people that I've met, and I've met some absolutely amazing people. And it's just little things that when people give you the chance to have a voice. So actually, you joke about the comics podcast, but when you're asked to do something like that, it feels like you've taken a step up. And it feels like you're almost being recognised as somebody who contributes to what is in actual fact the British comic scene, which is amazing, because
this is the British comic scene now, isn't it?
And that's mind blowing that actually you're representing a country in something, in anything. And I always find it mind blowing when you're like on Twitter and things like that, and you have a creator who you admire, or who somebody who you think has got it all sorted out and who's made it, and they comment on your work or something and go, oh yeah, I've heard of that guy, oh I like that, and you think, wow, that's incredible. I had a moment with a moment.
Wow.
Ryan Stegman in one of, he was doing a drawing video, and it literally, I was watching it, it was on Twitter. I love watching that guy work. Yeah. And somebody literally popped up a question and said, like, oh, have you seen Chris Imber's work? And I was literally like to my wife, oh, goodness. And when he turned around, he went, yeah, I know his work, I love it. And it was, but it was like a moment like that. It's something so small, but you think that has just made this all worthwhile.
Yeah.
Mm. So that was, yeah.
Nice.
One day you'll be doing that for someone.
I won't. Have you heard of Vince Hunt?
Nope.
So, like, you've both been on quite big journeys now, I would say. You're successful, really. Would you consider yourself to be successful?
No.
Do you not?
No, not at all.
Really?
You do.
I mean, I don't know. I pay my rent and I have nice...
Oh, well,
I can buy nice things.
That's a massive success then. Because you're...
I'm full-time.
You're full-time.
Comics, yeah.
Which I think is a massive thing, isn't it? Say that.
It was a big, frightening step, yeah.
Yeah. Well, did that take a while to lead up to?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've done a lot of jobs.
Yeah. So, but that was always what you wanted to always do.
Well, I knew I always wanted to draw.
Yeah.
It took me a while to realise I wanted to do comics, but I knew I always wanted to.
What keeps you wanting to make comics or just draw? What is it that sort of pushes you on from that point of view?
Because that whole keeping inspired and like keeping the motivation going, that can be an issue for a lot of people out there.
It's a fairly solitary sort of existence,
isn't it?
You know?
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I've never done anything that's made me feel...
Don't say happy.
This is, I've got to say, this is like one of those it's moments where you've never considered it, but now you have. You've ruined it, Vince.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's funny that you said that it's a solitary thing, because it, in a lot of ways it is. But I guess, oh, this is going to sound really... I feel less alone when I make comics. Because
I get that.
Yeah. Especially...
Communicating with people through your
eyes, yeah.
And also you're spending time with those characters. If you're creating characters, you get to, you know, whether it's writing or drawing, you're spending time. And like, I've personally created characters that I know in and out. And I love these people. I won't put them through a ringer if I don't want them to experience that. It's strange how creating a character will have that effect on you. And they become, in this sense, I say mental, but they kind of become like friends, don't they? they become real in your head. Yeah, Chris, you love creating characters.
This is the first make a note of today's date.
Oh, well, I guess it all depends on the character you create, doesn't
it? No, it's true. You have a relationship with them. Yeah. I'm a bit sadistic in that, though, because I like to... I'm like Dan Butcher. I like to put my characters through everything going.
If anyone out here has read Vanguard, the webcomic, brilliant characters that go through absolute hell.
I think Dan's clearly a very angry man on the inside.
Yeah. He's a very nice man. So it's good that he's channeling it.
That's where it all goes.
Well, comics are an outlet as well, aren't they?
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
When it comes to creating, what do you like to listen to or watch or anything in the background? I always find this fascinating in terms of music, etc. What's your muse?
I like silence. Such a misery in my studio. Tony, I'm just like, no, I can't listen to anything. I find it really difficult if there's any music on.
Really?
But because my partner also makes comics and we work in the same studio, he really likes having music on. So we try and do a day on and a day off. But yeah, I find it worse if it's music with lyrics. So it's a little bit easier if it's instrumentals. But yeah, I find it really hard. So, and TV, I couldn't do at all. Like, that would be awful.
It's almost too much of a distraction.
It's too much,
TV.
Yeah.
Deftones.
What, just constantly?
Just constantly Deftones. And Smashing Pumpkins. Deftones and Smashing Pumpkins fuel me. And really, really awful movies. You know, when you go on like the Sky Movie Planner and like that on demand thing and you see a movie that you've never heard of, but it just says blood, guts, and you're like, I'm having that. And I put that on, and my iPad sits on top of my drawing board, and it's on, and I basically tune in for the deaths and then tune back out again. Yeah. I'm all right. It's not a cry for help, but. Actually, I don't know whether I'm all right.
I feel now that you've said it out loud.
Yeah.
But no, I feel this is a real confessional sort of panel.
It is,
there,
yeah.
I was going to make it about making comics. Now I just want to make sure that you guys are all okay.
Tell me about your parents.
Shall we go there?
My mum was in the Deftones and my dad was a murderer.
My dad liked to smash pumpkins.
Hasn't affected me at all.
Shall we have a couple of listener questions?
Yeah.
So listener questions, audience questions.
Questions, hands up. Who'd like to ask a question?
Of course.
Here we go. Good man.
So, let's say, how do you get around character tropes? So, let's say you're designing a character, Pork Pie Man, who's essentially like...
Pork Pie. Sounded like it was going to be a really great question as well. Blunted.
Sorry,
carry on.
Yeah.
My money was on you, Kevin, for that one.
So this is when you get a character like Pork Pie Man, who's basically Banana Man, but more pies. How do you get around to all the character trope? You know, is it okay to have character tropes? So do you ignore them or try and avoid them? You know,
avoid the cliche is what you're saying, yeah.
I think it's hard to sometimes, depending on the character, because sometimes you want something recognisable in your character, but I try and meet it head on and go completely the other way. This is from a guy who has a Western comic with a guy in it called John H. Wilson, who's a sheriff, who's like gruff and rough, and but
so you've leaned into that one.
Yeah, I think with the Western style comic, I think I tried to lean into it as much as I could, and actually it's playful. Mm. It's nice because you get to play around with characters and you get to play around with stereotypes.
Yeah, Western's one of those genres that people expect certain things from it.
Yeah, they definitely do.
They expect the guns to be worn in certain places and to be, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but whenever I'm designing a character, I'll try and go the opposite way to what you would expect.
How do you find your character design?
I guess it's good to be aware of tropes and cliches and stuff. But I always just, if there's a reason for a character to have a certain thing about them, then that's fine, as long as you can justify it, I think.
Mm. I mean, you must have tried to avoid that. Was it in Artificial Flowers when you base it in the art gallery? Because there's so many Warholian tropes there, aren't there, that you could have just gone for. Yeah.
I think there's a couple of berets, definitely. But, also being aware of what people will expect when you describe what you're making.
You don't want to rip anybody out of the page, do you?
No.
And actually, if you completely contradict what they think they're going to see, you can completely pop the
bubble. Yeah, sometimes it can be quite jarring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do both of you have plans, have ideas?
Vince, we've only just met.
I know a lovely Indian place. for like comic ideas, comic stories, possibly a series or a book, that is absolutely nothing like anything you've done before, but you want to try your hand at doing.
Would you do a Western, for example, and would you do an autobiographical comic?
I'd love
to see both of those.
Yeah, I would as well. Yeah,
I think I'd find it really difficult. I really do. I think I'd find that really hard to do.
An autobio thing.
Yeah. I think I'd find it very. It's a world I don't have enough understanding of yet.
You're literally yourself, though.
Yeah. that's the frightening thought.
Okay, right.
I think I've always had my head in the clouds. I think I've always, whenever I've been walking down the road, like trees at the side of the road and everything, I think I've always seen Ninja Turtles jump in from one tree to another. And I think I've always kind of, my imagination has gone that extra stretch to something inhumanely possible happening, and I've never really looked more inwardly.
Yeah.
So I would find that quite difficult, yeah.
Would you say the same with you, Rachel?
This is where you turn around and go, Sharon's will be easy.
Yeah. I've got a Western book coming out next year.
I can see a guest issue on the horizon, Rachel. Mm. Yeah, definitely. Uh-huh.
Pop in.
So have you never thought about stepping into a specific genre like that?
I mean, never say never.
Right now you're saying never.
No. I never thought I'd write Doctor Who comics, but they're paying me to do that. So, and I've ended up really enjoying it and stuff. Yeah. But
So it's the way you do it, not the genre, is what you're saying, essentially.
Yeah.
I suppose. Yeah. For me, it's always.
There's a twist you could put on a Western, isn't there? I'm sure.
Yeah. For me, my stories are always really character driven. So, and then the environments that they inhabit is always kind of secondary. So there's no reason why I wouldn't write a story in the Wild West.
But, yeah. Don't make another question.
How do you pick your next project? I mean, how do you weave through all your ideas to then go, that's the one I'm going to work on next?
It's the one that keeps you up at night for me.
Okay.
The one that you can't stop thinking about. I've usually only got I don't get loads of ideas at once, but the one that I want to work on is the usually takes up most of my brain.
Yeah, the one that sticks.
Yeah.
So I'll have three or four ideas on the back burner at once, and then the one that I just can't, can't get out of my head is the one that lasts. And then I put all the other characters on the back burner. Sometimes they appear in books that I'm already working on as a secondary character. Sometimes they just get left on the shelf for a little while. Just the thing that sticks.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Oh, okay.
Where do you see yourself in the future? What do you want to do? When do you think you're going to be successful?
Hmm.
Maybe in 10 years or
Right, I think I'll actually feel successful if I'm still doing this in 10 years. Because, like you say, it takes an enormous amount of staying power and it takes an enormous amount of willpower to be sat there thinking, I could actually have my feet up be watching TV, which actually I can't think of anything worse. But there's some times when you just sat at your drawing board. I've been there before and I've fallen asleep on the drawing board and I've been woken up by my wife who said, like, you've just got to stop now. As long as I'm still doing it and I'm still enjoying it, I'll consider that success. But it's a weird thing because you speak to all the people who you consider to be big creators and they all seem to want the one freedom that they want to be able to do is to create creator-owned books. And they see themselves as trapped. So it's almost like you've got a fence up. I was going to say a wall, but I'm not going to say a wall. It's almost like you've got a fence up and you've got all the people who are creating comics, mainstream comics or any kind of comics, and having to hit those deadlines every week, who want to climb the fence and do their own thing. And you've got all the people who are doing their own thing who kind of want to climb the fence and try the pro comics game and to do these characters that everybody knows and loves. I'd like to have a go at that. I really would. I'd like to do something for a big company one day. But at the moment, I'm really happy doing what I'm doing.
That's interesting what you say. Is there anyone, both of you, who you see as the ideal? You're almost a little bit jealous of them. You'd want that career.
Maybe Emmy Lennox.
Okay.
I really admire her. She's the one who got me into like autobio diary comics. She's just going from strength to strength. She's amazing. But yeah. But I find her inspiring rather than
good. That's the best way to be, isn't it? Yeah.
I'd love to be in like a Greg Capullo's kind of shoes. Where people are actually chasing you for what you do rather than you having to fit what they do. And I think there's so many artists like J. Scott Campbell, regardless of, I know he has a lot of backlash about the way he portrays certain things, but he's definitely a brand. He's turned himself into a brand so that what he does is desired by certain companies and they come to him for that particular thing.
Yeah.
And there's certain artists that seem to transcend the industry and they've become art. Does that make sense? They've become artists. So they're not okay. comic book artists. They've become artists as such, and people go to them for a specific thing, and that would be amazing.
Yeah,
okay. To do what you're completely kind of you can do, and have people come to you for that would be ace.
Nice.
Well, it won't be long. But until then, where can people find more of your work, etc.? If they haven't bought it today.
I have a pile of comics on my kitchen table. There's one in the garage. www.facebook.com/recklessherohq /artofchrisimber. And I'm on Instagram as artofchrisimber and Twitter as reckless_imber.
Blimey.
Thank you.
What about you, Rachel? Where can people find you?
RachelSmith.org. That's Rachel with an AEL. Everything's on there. You can find my Twitter and everything on there.
Yeah. And thank you very much for joining us for this panel and for the questions and everything. Obviously, if you haven't listened to the show before, you can go to awesomecomics.podbean.com. I had to write that down.
Why are you reading this?
We've done 85 shows and still got to read where it happens.
I feel I need to howl like a wolf in a minute and you need to play some air guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that was so good. We should just finish the panel with that. But thank you very much for the last panel of the day. It's been a good laugh.
Yeah.
And I could talk to you guys all day, but we can't. So goodbye. Goodbye.
So, wasn't that lovely, Tony?
Why wasn't it?
Yeah, you were right.
I can't remember what I said. I haven't got a clue.
To be honest,
but I'm just going to agree with
you. It was only a decent panel because of our lovely guests. So, thank you, Rachel, for joining us. and it was proper good fun. And as you can
see,
who
won the prize? It was Tom, wasn't it? Tom Curry.
Tom Curry did indeed win the prize. So
very well done, Tom.
Yeah,
we're proud of you.
We're getting better at panels.
Yeah, not that much better, to be fair. But we'll get there eventually.
Always have the bar low, Tony. What I would say.
I do try not to look at you because you do that face like, what the fuck did you just say, face? Okay. You think I'm trying to put you off, but I'm not. I'm just trying to think of something to say.
Yeah. I think I have got the title of our Leamington panel, though. Low expectations with the Awesome Comics podcast. I think that's probably the best way to do it.
How about even bad sex is good sex? How's that for a topic?
Any sex. Oh, dear. Anyway, speaking of sex, what about shout-outs? Have we got any shout-outs this week?
Yeah, I've got some. Firstly, thanks to everyone who went to NeverIronAnything at neverironanything.blogspot.com, which is my blog, and read the article I wrote about buying comics in comic shops. I was quite pleased, actually. Got almost 1,000 reads, which is pretty good.
Yeah. It is funny. It does make me laugh. It's very vinegary. Is that the way?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Watch this space. There might be something coming out of that, which I got spoken to about by someone this week. So there might be something maybe coming out of that. I don't want to say too much at the moment. But watch this space. Yeah, where I'm going to collaborate with someone. Two people, in fact. Yeah, we'll see what happens. Okay. There's another one going up probably next week sometime, which I'm quite proud of as well, which is just me shouting at a computer screen a lot.
Just to let people know, this is basically, it is kind of going to be an ongoing sort of, it's not an article, it's not really a blog, really,
it's
is it?
It's a column, I suppose,
it's
isn't
a
it?
Column, yeah.
Yeah,
it's, yeah. Imagine you're reading your paper, and then there is the article by Tony Esmond every week, and you thought, here we go, what is that fucker going to say this week?
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah, I've got a little notebook in front of me, and written on the front of it, I've written, no more safe. So, you know, all hand, you know. You better watch out. But it's basically thought, I've been going to comic shops pretty much 40 years non-stop, and I thought, you could still get in the same shit in there. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Apart from the time that woman in Malta locked me in and refused to let me leave until I promised wouldn't go to the comic convention run by her enemy. It's pretty much a little bit of a taster of all the experiences you'll get going into a comic shop. Yeah. Mostly bad. Some good ones. You know. Yeah.
It's satirical. It's hilarious. And it's basically a grumpy old comic fan's rant at the world, isn't it? Imagine mole rats crossed with falling down, and that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, tell him, Steve, Dave. Nicely done. Yeah. The other one is Kickstarter Corner, which I'm now calling it.
Yeah.
So we would be remiss not to mention these because they're all friends of ours. Cognition 2 by Ken Reynolds has literally just passed its target after about 24 hours, I think. Brethren Born 3 by John Late has just smashed through it. I think he's off into the stratosphere somewhere. The Human Beings by Stuart McCune. That is also brilliant and has broken its barriers, whatever they call it. The Ape Who Punched Me by Bounce Comics, which is Matt Rook and Grenier McContry, who are both past guests. And that is a brilliant series. Needs your attention. I think they've got about 8 more days to go.
Yeah.
Get on it. Because it's a really, really great series. Yeah, all worthy. Seems to have been like a load of Kickstarters just gone live in the last couple of weeks, didn't they, really?
Yeah.
And all of them are great. All of them, and they're all comics I know you will be in your hands very soon. It's not like a hit and hope one, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Dearly Departed Dan Butcher. the El Marvo Kickstarter, which, as this is launched, I think it's probably got about 30 hours, 40 hours left on it.
Okay.
So if you haven't pledged yet, get on it, because Mr. Butcher's going to be cranking out an amazing artwork for that. We can be nice about him this week because he's not here.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Don't worry, folks. When he's back, we'll call him a bumhead. That'd be fine.
Yeah.
And just a small shout out. Just thank you to all the people. We've been sort of inundated with some new comics to read recently.
Yeah, I've got. I went from having an empty Dropbox to almost a full one now.
Yeah.
Uber. But. Yeah, there's loads of stuff, and I'll be digging into. We've divvied it up, haven't we?
Yeah.
So we're going to be digging into it this week. Yeah, thanks a lot. If you have got a comic that you know you're looking to drop now with the convention season full swing, then we'd love to have a look at it and talk about it if we like it, you know. Yeah. So let us know.
Definitely. I'll tell you what else is happening now, and we're going to have the second ever Ask Auntie Tony. Ask
yeah.
As you know. We try to help our listeners on this show, and it's not just about comics, people, because we're people with feelings and relationships and emotions, and sometimes you wonderful people, you need help in the world, and Auntie Tony is here to help you.
I'm sending you a Richard picture right at this moment.
So we always welcome you on Ask Auntie Tony. It's our agony aunt column of the week.
Yeah. Are you going to read it out?
I am indeed. Let me finish.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to send it to me. Yeah.
Yes. So this question, which comes from a concerned gardener.
Oh.
Yeah.
I like where this is going.
Who wished not to be named. And you can understand. These are personal questions. No. We can understand this. But here's the letter we got sent. Dear Auntie Tony.
Nice.
I have a problem. I hope you'll be able to help me out. I believe my partner might be cheating on me.
God.
At first,
it's getting serious.
It was the little things. She'd come home late from work with no explanation. When I asked where she'd been, it was always just lots of work on. Don't worry.
Oh, okay.
Then there were work trips she had to go on with just her and the boss.
Oh.
It was like carbon monoxide poisoning. You didn't realise there was a problem till it was too late.
Oh, okay.
Now, this has escalated to the point where she regularly gets home so late that I'm in bed. I know something is going on.
Oh, no.
One night, I decided to wait up and see who was dropping her off. And as I was looking out the window, I saw she was walking down the road and the car had sped off without me seeing the driver. So last night...
Oh, could be anyone.
Exactly.
It's not you, Vince, is it?
Last night, I waited in our front garden behind our wall. While there, I spotted that our rose bush was completely covered in green fly. Do you know of a way to organically remove them? Or should I just give up on the bush altogether?
Well, interesting conundrum there, isn't it? I thought it was going somewhere else there for a minute. But I'm glad we ended up with bushes, which is obviously a speciality of mine.
Exactly. So how can we help out this concerned gardener, Tony?
Concerned gardener, yeah. We should put that tune to Gardener's Question Time, whatever it is, on Radio 4. That's good, isn't it? Well, as a dedicated vegetarian, as I'm sure everyone knows, that I'm a very moral person.
Yeah.
Andy is
75% turnip.
That's it. I don't think I can allow or encourage any green fly to be exterminated or killed in any way. So no green fly were harmed due to this podcast, I'd like to point out. However, I am a big proponent of trimming the bush.
Yeah.
When it's agreeable, you know.
Yeah.
I like a bit of manscaping occasionally. You know.
Well, you got to look after yourself, haven't you, Tony?
I think so. I mean, I used to be a big proponent of a really big bush, you know, one that, you know, a really... I'm talking about rose bush here, so
yeah,
don't
well,
get...
Well, of course
right,
yeah.
Clean your minds out.
You want a full bush, don't you?
I like a really big, like, bouncy bush that, you know, where some of the bush element goes down the leg of the tree. Does that make sense? Do you know what I mean?
that does make sense.
Yeah, and maybe around the back as well a little bit.
Sometimes,
you know,
the bigger bush, the better. That's what we think.
I think so. Yeah. I like a big... In the 70s, rose bushes were much bigger, weren't they?
They were huge.
You see people taking pictures of them.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Massive.
Have your eye out sometimes.
Sometimes. Depends if you didn't prune it.
Mm. But modern society seems to have, you know, gone against the big bush, I think, these days. And
we've gone pruning mad, haven't we?
I think it's gone a bit overboard. I think we've gone too crazy around it. I'm not a big lover of no bush. I think you can make a mistake by having no bush at all.
Well, you know, your garden just doesn't look the same when it's got no bush.
Does it? No, I think so. So trim it back, get your hose out and spray it. That's what I would say to you. Give it a good squirt. And I think that's going to help. I was in the garage the other day and it said beware extra long hose, so I took a picture of it and posted on Twitter because I thought it was funny.
But where do you think you need to spray it, Tony? Do you think you should spray it at the front or the back or just everywhere?
All over. I think just go over it. Like it looks like a bucket of wallpaper paste has been thrown in your face. That's what I'm going to say. So thanks, anonymous writer, who we don't know who it is. Thank you very much for writing with that problem, and I hope we solved it for you. Yeah.
So did we give him an answer to how to get rid of the green fly?
Spray it. Get your hose out. Trim it back. Spray it as much as you can.
Yeah.
All over the place.
Get something organic and just...
Yeah. This used to be the reason I used to get called Zorro, because I used to do the sort of mark of Zorro when I was spraying bushes, you know.
Yeah.
So,
nice. Mm. So there you go, folks. We're here. If you need to talk to us, I think we can really help you all out. So if you need to send your questions to Ask Auntie Tony, you can send them to awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, and yeah, we'll help your lives,
and yeah,
and also
nice.
Your gardens. Look after your gardens, people. No one likes a massive bush. Anyway, we've recommended something there for people, and now we're going to recommend some comics. So,
funny enough, somebody's just sent me a picture, and it's making me laugh. Sorry.
Yeah. It's not a Richard picture, is it?
Who the fuck is Tugboat? What the fuck's that all about?
I'll have you know, Tugboat was a WWF wrestler in the 80s and early 90s.
Oh, what a surprise. Andrew Lee Potts from Primeval is going to a comic convention. What a fucking surprise.
I'll tell you what, I feel ashamed of this now, but I've never watched Primeval. Go on, internet, yeah. Judge me.
I tell you what, the amount of people that I get kind of like that saying, can I be a guest at your show, is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I had one from that was this, he was some so-called manager of this, I won't name who the guy was, it was somebody I'd never heard of who was in Doctor Who apparently, and it was like, oh, so-and-so has penciled your con into his calendar, really likes the look of it, he thinks it'd be a great addition to it. So I went, right, what comics has he done then? I know he's in Doctor Who. Well, you clearly haven't looked at what our show's about. I can't.
The bloke from George and Mildred's at this one. That's just genius. Has he always looked like that? Has he always just looked like a right old bloke?
I think he has. Some people are born old, aren't they?
Do you know what fucking I mean? Trevor and Simon. Oh my God, I'm bringing a toothache for this one.
Swing your pants.
Yeah, don't do duvets.
Look, just Google some of these guests we're talking about and you'll find out about the Comic-Con.
Okay, there you go. Wow. Yeah, we won't mention it. We don't want to give it airspace, but there you go.
Yeah. Anyway, comic recommendations. Right. Tony, go.
I'm going to go for one that I've talked about before, actually, and I've been meaning to talk about it for about 6 months now, and gets been put on the back burner for other stuff that's come out, but it's Paying for It. By Chester Brown, which is subtitled A Comic Strip Memoir About Being a John. Have you read this, Dan?
No, I've not read it. No, I've not heard of that. No.
Yeah, it's quite dark, I'm going to say. It's got an introduction by Robert Crumb, so that kind of puts you where you might think it's going. There's going to be spoilers in this. It's a six-year-old book, so I don't really care. Chester is a 56-year-old Canadian gentleman. And he is very well thought of in the indie scene. He's a creator of books like Yummy Fur, Ed the Happy Clown, which I sent you a picture of today, didn't I, Vince?
You did indeed.
Yeah, which was it a penis with the President of America on the end of it?
Yeah, but you said it was me.
Yeah, I did, yeah. And The Playboy and I Never Liked You. He's very well respected. And he writes very adult comics that are controversial pretty much at every single image, you know. He's at times very edgy and blasphemous at times, but Paying for It is a true story, so it's an autobiographical comic. I'm working on a piece on autobiographical comics at the moment for something, and this was one of the things I did as a bit of research, and I don't think you get more of an honest book than this one. There are other aspects to it which we'll get into at the moment. The story goes that Chester broke up with his long-term girlfriend, his partner, who was Suk Yu Lee. Now, has anyone seen the movie Short Bus? It was quite a big art house movie a few years ago, she's the actress in that. It's quite a well-known art house cinema movie because it contained a lot of hardcore pornography. Do you know the one I mean?
Yeah, I know the one you mean. Yeah.
It's about a lady who sort of discovers herself sexually. As I recall, it's a long time since I've seen it, but I think she's never had an orgasm and she sort of explores the world trying to find it, you know. His logic in this, Chester, is that he feels unable to chat up girls. So and he's not really the sort of kind of guy who can. He says he's had a couple of girlfriends, but he's never slept with anyone who isn't someone he's in a relationship with, put it that way. So he's not a kind of a one night stand kind of guy. Well, that makes any difference, I don't really know. So after 2 years of no sex, he decides in this sort of very cold and logical way that he's going to start paying prostitutes for sex. His friends appear in it, and one is Seth, the indie comics guy, and one is Joe Matt, who wrote Spent, that I know Dan spoke about 6 months ago, about a guy who masturbates a lot.
Yeah.
But this makes it sound like it's a sort of bragging comic, and it's not. It's the opposite. It's very, very sad for a number of reasons. And Chester works out this plan. He works it out weirdly in stages, and he's very cold emotionally. And he's the kind of guy who just goes on about researching and planning to meet a prostitute. And this sort of strange, sort of obsessive compulsive research comes across as, at moments, quite darkly funny. There's a certain naivety to him where I think he considers what is going on in the world when he sort of plans it out. There's a sort of hilarious five-page... It's a long book. It's a sort of hilarious five-page sequence where Chester goes to a phone box. He's too scared to use his house phone because he thinks the police might be, you know, getting the numbers of everyone calling prostitutes, you know. And he goes to a phone box and rings a load of prostitutes up. And one of the first phone calls he makes, he gets quite upset because he's rung this girl up, or lady up, and he's hung up after she told him she was 28 years old, I think it was. And he hung up, and there's this sort of inner dialogue going on where he thinks, well, I hope she doesn't think I'm rude. I hope she doesn't think I hung up because she's too old. That might, you know, she might not feel very good around it, you know. He sort of worries about everything in his life, fucking nonstop. So he finally goes there, and he wants a massage, and he goes to this woman's flat, and she says, do you want a massage? Which is, I'm guessing, is code. You know, I'm saying, is that, you know, I don't know. Is it one of these things they think, oh, if the cop comes in, I can't say I'm going to have sex with, sort of in, you know, police entrapment or something. So she says, do you want a massage? And he uses the phrase, and in the back, he backs this up where he says, no, I'd like vaginal intercourse. So it's sort of, you know, the least romantic, you know, well, I know it shouldn't be, but the least romantic sort of turn of phrase ever. And he leaves with this sort of strange exhilaration, which he describes, you know, walking away. And he goes, and everyone he goes to, and it's a long series of, I can't remember how many pages it is. I think it's about 280 pages, this book. And it's a long series of visits, and each chapter is, or amongst some sort of personal items, are about each girl he goes to see. And he says things like, oh, I don't like her, she's got cellulite on his legs. And then he sort of stresses about not being able to finish having sex. And then he just goes on and on and on about, will this one take her bra off? She's not how she's described on the phone. But everything is so sort of cold and calculating, it becomes almost like a little bit disturbing. Mm-hmm. And then, because he says, oh, I'm an honest and open person, he heads off and he tells all his friends and his ex-girlfriends about it. It's just fucking bizarre. And then over these series of, and it is a book that goes on for years, he visits the prostitutes and he begins to open up to them about who he is. I think at one point, I think the name he uses is Stephen McDougal. One of the ladies says to him, what's your name? And he goes, Stephen McDougal, you know. And in the back, in the annotations in the back, he says, I apologise to anyone called Stephen McDougal. Yeah. So he goes to one of them, and he eventually starts opening up to them, and he gives one of them a copy of his comic, and he sort of tries to impress her by saying, yeah, no, I draw comics. You know, this is about Louis Riel. It's a sort of autobiographical, it's a story about a historical figure, a biography of a historical figure. And then he says to one of them, oh, do you work... do you work in the evenings? And she says, no, I don't work in the evenings. She says, I don't like clients who are drunk. And she says, oh, and I don't like clients who've got big penises. That's why I like you so much. And so these are like real aspects of his life that he's including in this comic. You know, it's very sort of confessional. Around the 100-page mark, it just becomes chapter after chapter of him seeing different girls. And it just becomes darn right fucking depressing for a period. He sleeps with one girl and then he realizes but he tips them as well. He does stuff, oh, shall I tip them? I don't really understand. And he tries to give them extra money, and they go, no, I don't really. And he says, no, I think you should take it, sort of thing. He has sex with one girl, and she watches TV for the whole time while he's having sex with her. He fails to get an erection quite a few times, or the sex wasn't that great. And he actually is embarrassed by this. So he says, oh, I'm, you know, and the prostitute's going, oh, is it me? And he says, oh, no, you know, I think it was me. You know, and he uses, and then one of them, he says, oh, no, I jacked off just before I came out. That's why it wasn't happening. Not like, no, you're not really my type, or I couldn't manage it because I'm in this really seedy flat having sex with a prostitute, you know. And then he gets, he eventually leaves his girlfriend, because during this period he was living with his ex-girlfriend. They'd split up, but she was with her new boyfriend, and he sort of lived in the spare room. And then he decides to start taking him to his own house. So he decides, and he lives in a trashy sort of, you know, just crap everywhere. So he thinks, oh, I'll tidy up. So he tidies up, and then he puts his sort of footstool in the middle of the room where he leaves the money when they come round. It's just fucking very strange. He starts seeing a prostitute who he calls Denise. He uses false names for them, and he doesn't really include details of them. And he regularly sees her over a six-year period. And he believes he's in a relationship with her. It's very strange. And one of the last lines in the book is he says, I probably love Denise, who's this prostitute. There's a video that you can watch about it. I Googled it, and there's a video where he gives a talk. And it's kind of like a continuation of the book, really, because he says what's happened. And he says, yes, he's in relationship with this girl he calls Denise. He pays her for sex, but she assures him that she doesn't sleep with anyone else. So as far as he's concerned, that is a relationship. It's all very strange. Seth appears throughout it, and he gives a little... There's some notes from Seth in the back of it. I genuinely reading it, I think he's got a sort of twisted logic about it all. You know, he says, look, you know, he's a great believer that, you know, prostitution should be legalized, and I understand that there is an argument for that, and, you know, I'll listen to people. But he doesn't seem to consider the other side of the coin, where, you know, who are these girls? Some of them, he actually says to them, how old are you? And they say 18, and he says, well, I can probably believe that, you know, or something along those lines. It's all a bit strange. He is harshly honest. Like no other creator you'll ever read, this is the most honest book you'll ever read, you know, about something that is, you know, for I'm sure a lot of men out there, is this sort of terrible secret that they keep to themselves. He decides, oh, I think I'll do a Drawn and Quarterly book about it. Very raw. It's like reading James Joyce, if any of you have read that. You know, Portrait of an Artist is an incredibly sort of honest sort of book. It's very similar to that. The artwork is very bare, very small panels. Generally sort of 6 to 9 panels on a page, in a grid pretty much all the way through it. Very tiny panels. And he draws himself as this sort of expressionless. His face is just what, his mouth is just one straight line, and he wears glasses, so it's a very expressionless face of his, which kind of fits his sort of slightly creepy persona. And he never shows the faces of the prostitutes at all, which I thought was an interesting choice. Mm. He shows their bodies, he shows them naked, he shows them putting condoms on him, and you know, he shows all sorts of things. But he doesn't show their faces, and he doesn't use their names. And whenever they say their address, it's always like starred out or lined out sort of thing. It's very interesting. I know that there's been an awful lot of controversy about it. I think he's appeared on a couple of podcasts, and then either he or the podcaster decided not to run it because it's just too near the knuckle, I think, for a lot of people. 280 pages. Yeah, it's very strange. 280 pages, $12.99 actually, a paperback version, which I think is pretty good money. But be careful, if you're going to buy it on Amazon, there are other websites that are available, then the description is of another fucking book, because Amazon has somehow fucked it up. I'm just trying to find the name.
We'll put a link in the show notes, and then people can.
Yeah, yeah. And the YouTube talk is called Chester Brown Hiring Love, because that's how he believes it. That's how he sees it. You know, he thinks, oh, I'm a very practical person. I'm just not the sort of person who would keep a girl happy in a relationship, because in the sort of limited number of relationships I've had, it hasn't worked out. So what I'll do is I'll cut out the middleman, and I'll just have sex with prostitutes. And there's panels of him showing how much he's going to spend a year on a calculator, where he's sitting there sort of coldly working it out. And he's very sort of, he goes through newspapers and web. I think the period it runs is when, was before the internet was so sort of pernicious. You'd find women in the back of newspapers in America and in Canada, and then moves onto the internet. So he's quite sort of, oh, I like the look of her. How much is she? Where does she live? You know, it's almost like he's got a spreadsheet somewhere he's writing on. You know, it's an important book. I think it is an important book that you know people should, you know, if they're interested in autobiographical comics, and there are an awful lot out there that people doing. People seem to think we talked about this before we came on air, but people seem to think that an autobiographical comic is just a comic of them talking to their boyfriend, and I'm getting a little bit sick of it, to be fair. I'd like something that is interesting, you know, and honest, more, perhaps a little bit more honest in a comic that I'm reading. And this takes it to the extreme, but as with all fiction, you know, sometimes that sort of honesty and that rawness, and you know, is an important thing to read, and to read something that is done, you know, it's a well made, you know, it's a fast read at 280 pages. I reread it in the morning. You know, it's a very interesting, and it's a dialogue on whether prostitution should be legalized and what the Johns really are. I think it doesn't address certain things like the victims, you know, some women are prostitutes, and they're prostitutes on purpose, and that's what they want to do. So, you know, and that they do it. But I think that there are some victims who are treated, you know, and kept in houses and are prostitutes. I don't think he addresses that enough. But, yeah, it's an interesting read. It's something that will make you think anyway. So it's Paying for It by Chester Brown, and it's from Drawn and Quarterly. There you go.
There you go. Well, like I said, we'll have a link in the show notes.
Yep.
If Amazon haven't done it right, Tony's going to send me a lovely link, and I'll put it in there. Thankfully, Tony knows what he's talking about.
Apparently,
yeah. My pick, my recommendation for the week is something completely different.
Good.
And it is slightly different. I've gone for a different one that I spoke to Tony about what I was going to talk about this week, but I've changed it up at the last moment.
Oh, you did you? Oh, okay. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's you.
You know, I'm just crazy. I'm alternative. I'm improv. I'm a wanker, if I talk like that. anyway, this week, my recommendation is one of my Comixology purchases that I got recently. I got the first issue of Blood and Gourd. Have you ever heard of this one?
No, I haven't.
I've seen it on social media, and the artwork looked amazing. So, you know, I know it's been around since, I think, October last year, but that's the beauty of digital comics. They're always at your beck and call, aren't they? You can just double click. Mm. It's only a couple of pounds. The first issue was 50 pages as well, so you're getting a decent chunk. But just to set the scene, here's the summary of it. It's Devil's Night in Olympia, Wyoming, and out at Henderson Farms, the festivities are reaching a crescendo. Young and old have gathered to pick their own pumpkin, drink hot apple cider, and partake in the usual pumpkin farm fare. However, something has awakened from deep within the fertile soil. After years of abuse and humiliation, the pumpkins are ready to pick us. You can beg, you can plead, you can scream, but these hell's lanterns are lit only with the burning desire to watch you die. Yes, it's about killer pumpkins. And... that's basically what happens. People have been doing experiments on pumpkins, and during a farming festival,
obviously,
they come to life and start just murdering people, basically, in gloriously horrible ways. Some of them take the forms of people, and then their skin breaks down, and you see, like, just roots and grass just break out of their skin. And when you describe it, it sounds hilarious, like it's a comedy horror, but it treats it deadly serious. And
when you described it, it reminded me, have you ever seen that Lost in Space episode? Is it something like The Great Vegetable Rebellion? It's in the last season of Lost
like
in Space.
That's like a band name.
Oh, you've got to watch it. I'll see if I can find a YouTube for it. But it's where, like, this bloke, it's just basically a giant carrot attacks them and stuff.
Oh, God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is brilliant. Yeah,
you can tell this is sort of born of influences of those great films like Critters, and you know those you know, like Pumpkinhead. I mean, that's a pumpkin pretty much just in name, really, isn't it? I think. Yeah. And just it's proper sort of, it seems like straight to video horror, but real. It's got very good professional values, like the artwork for it is almost like you can imagine that artist and just the layouts and everything being like a Marvel book. It's top quality stuff. Now the creators and writers are Jens K. Lund and D.H. Schultes, and the pencils are Dave Acosta.
I've heard of him.
Have you heard of him before?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
He's definitely, he's beautiful work.
I follow him on Instagram or something, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, he does a mean carnivorous pumpkin like no one else. And it's not just, you have these like actual pumpkins flying around where they've got like, they've just got teeth and they jump around and they actually land on people's heads and eat their heads. It's crazy. It's crazy, but it's a rollicking great time. It's like, you know, when you sit down and you watch a great sort of VHS horror movie, and you just, it just gives you exactly what you need. So yeah, I was thoroughly impressed by this. There's two issues on Comixology, so definitely gonna pick up the next one, because it's great stuff. I was, and I know certainly people like Chris Sides, I reckon he'll get a kick out of
stuff like this. Yeah, I can see Chris loving this.
Or, you know, anyone who's a fan of like horror comics done well, you know, wears its influences on its sleeve, treats it right, and does it in a very professional manner. It's from Dead Peasant Comics. Yeah, on the inside cover, there's an awful lot of credits for it. There's a lot of people working on it, and it's seemingly like they've thanked everyone. So that's quite good to see. You know, no one's left out. I'm not going to read the list though, because we'll be here all night. But I highly recommend it. Blood and Gourd. You can find them online, on social media, and definitely check it out on Comixology, because it's well worth it.
Nice.
So there's
cool.
My one. As you can tell, very different from paying for it. But Dan, what would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
I'd recommend The Bunker. Have you read that?
Yes.
Oh, I've not Charles Salt, that. Is
it? Charles Salt? No, it's... who's the writer? I can't remember now.
It's Josh... is it... Fialkov. I knew you'd say he's a writer. I was thinking, how the hell am I going to pronounce his bloody name? But I've kind of really got into that. I've picked up the first kind of three volumes. I mean, basically, in kind of what it is, there's a group of friends that stumble across a bunker buried in the woods. And then when they go inside in the bunker, and then they find letters from their future selves.
I've read the first issue.
Basically, as a group, they've ended up contributing to the destruction of the world, where there's hardly kind of anybody left. It was done through genetically modified food. They thought they were doing something great that ended up killing everybody that ate it. So they've basically got these letters that say what happens, but then kind of from what I've seen so far, they're kind of as a group, do they want to try and change what they do, or, you know, do they know that something's happened, but do they stay on that path and accept that that's the way it's going to go, or do they try and make, you know, different decisions to try and alter what's going to happen in the future? But then as a group, they all started, basically the group of friends starts breaking up, because there's a couple that ended up having an affair that kind of comes out, and other bits and pieces. Really kind of interesting kind of story, kind of a bit, a Lost type.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's got a very high concept. How does it keep that momentum?
From what I've kind of seen, read so far, it's kind of playing on how the group's kind of fragmented at the moment. So there's people within the group that want to kind of change what they do. There's others that kind of want to keep on the path and just let it happen. But then one of the kind of characters who's in it, his older self comes back. He comes basically from the future back in time. And then he's trying to manipulate his younger self to make sure that they carry on down the road that they that basically cause the destruction of the world, because in the future he's like the president of the US. I'm kind of like one volume in, but that's kind of the volume one was the first kind of four issues.
I think the first issue certainly was free on Comixology for quite a long time.
That's where I first saw it. I picked this is going back a while, because it's probably 3 or 4 years old now.
Yeah, I reckon. Yeah,
I picked up. I read volume one on Comixology, and then I decided to kind of get the volumes in, because I prefer the paper than the digital.
I really nice sort of brushy black and white artwork, I think, wasn't it?
They changed it slightly, because some of the lettering in the first version of it was quite difficult to read. Well, I found it quite difficult to read, but they've kind of they've changed the lettering in the volume that I've got, and it's colour now.
All right.
But it's not like kind of, you know, a real kind of, you know, a huge colour palette. It's kind of very, you know, the same kind of colours are used throughout it.
Yeah.
And
okay, it's sort of desaturated. It's not bright colours. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but it's what I've seen so far. It's great.
And I'll give that a go.
How it develops.
Sorry, who put that out, Dan? I missed that. Sorry.
It's by Oni Press.
Okay, brilliant. Yeah. Okay,
yeah, it's well worth picking up. Like I say, it's a good few years old now, but it's
yeah. No, I keep meaning to go back to that. I really like the first issue. Yeah, it's one of those ones I keep meaning to look at, and yeah, okay.
Yeah, definitely recommend having it in the kind of volume, in the colour, and then with the better kind of lettering, it's far easier.
So it's
to
perfect time to grab hold of it now, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm going to get that one as well. It's one of those ones that you kind of I forgot about. I remember hearing about it and thinking, I really must read that, but I just never got around to it, and now I can pick up the trades. Wonderful.
Very good.
I must admit, I've got a pile of trades to read that must be, it's like waist high on me, and I just can't get through. And especially now I've got my own comic store, and I'm like, oh yeah, I like the look of that. And then I take
the to read pile is ever growing.
And I've got about 8 of them. I've got bookmarks in them as well, so I've kind of been picking up ones. But
I've just started rereading Cerebus this week as well, and I'm like, okay, every so often I'll reread a volume.
You don't make life easy for yourself, do you, Tom?
I know. And that one, I think, I've got so many comics that are new that I haven't read, and I'm going back and rereading this stuff. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Like, I picked up a copy of The Beauty because Vince, you'd recommended that a few weeks ago on the show, and I've just picked up the first volume. I loved it, and then the second one, I'm not so sure.
Have you read the second one? I'm
about a third of the way through, but it's kind of in a completely different direction to the first.
Because the first was so strong.
It was great.
It was brilliant. I might have to wait before I get the second trade then.
Yeah, it's only been out a couple of weeks, the second trade.
Ah, I see. I'll probably still get it somewhere.
We'll certainly be getting some cheap trades at Leamington, won't we?
Yeah.
We're doing that again. Yeah.
Yeah.
We like that.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
Yes, so Leamington, thoroughly looking forward to it. And we hope you thoroughly enjoyed this episode, folks.
Yes.
It's been good fun. We missed you, Dan Butcher. But
we did.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode.
And from the loop.
We hope you bloody listened to this episode. but let us know what you thought about this episode, folks. If there's any comics that we need to know about, if there's anything we missed, or if anything you want us to discuss in upcoming episodes, you can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. Where another week without a poll, I think. Next week,
we need one next week, don't we?
We'll have to do a poll. We didn't need one because the chin wagging was quite easy about it this week.
It's quite a long one, I think, this one, isn't it?
Yeah, it will be, especially with the extra audio I got to put in. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you're a fan of the show, and you do the Facebookings, join our group, Awesome Comics Talk, where people can talk about the show, let us know what they think, and people just genuinely interact and have a good time.
There's a lot of good advice going on there as well.
Lots of advice, and we occasionally post, don't we, Tony? But you know, we just
as lots of other people at the moment. Yeah, it's really good. I know some people have been going, oh, what can I do with my Kickstarter and all this sort of thing, and it's been really useful for people, hopefully.
It's good.
Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, thank you very much. Likewise on the Stitcher and Podnose network. And wherever you listen to us, if there's a chance to give us a review, give us a lovely review. You know, we'll be your best friend, basically.
Well, kind of, yeah.
I will. I'm a hugger, so I'll hug you.
Yeah.
And Tony will take photos. Where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Ezohyz. I'm in the review section of Down the Tubes. I've got a couple of coming up, and I'll obviously be doing a piece on Leamington. And if you go to neverironanything.blogspot.com, you can have a read of the new series of articles I'm doing. The next one should be the end of this week sometime.
Lovely. You can follow me online @JesterDiablo on Twitter, and you find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. And Dan, where can people find you and Leamington Comic Con again?
Yeah, if you find us on Twitter, it's at Lem Comic Con, so that's LEAM Comic Con. Also on Facebook as well, under www.facebook.com/LemComicCon. And also, if you want to as well, is you could give us a follow on our Spartown Comics Twitter pages as well, or visit spartowncomics.co.uk for details about what we're up to in and around Leamington and the community. And also there's a section on Leamington Comic Con there with all guest announcements and information, brilliant, blogs and other bits and pieces.
Excellent. Or just pop by the stall.
Whenever I'm in
town, I pop by for a chin wag. Yeah, it's a good little stall, dude. Yeah, I've always picked up some good stuff. Yeah, very good.
Cheers.
There you go. Nice. We positively spoilt you for choice this week with Convention Talk. And next week, we'll have the guys from King's Legacy on.
So, yep, we'll discover what they've let themselves in for.
I think they're a bit nervous. why is it that laugh we just did was like really evil? Like,
yeah. We'll be giving them a quiz.
Oh God, yeah, shall we? No.
Yeah, good idea. Let's do it. Yeah.
Let's discuss how we're going to do the good cop bad cop routine.
Okay.
Off air. But as for you, lovely folks, have a brilliant week. Read loads of small press and beyond. Take care of yourselves. Stay safe. Look after each other. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya. Thank you.